Good morning, all. Declare the meeting open at 9:33. And if I could just start by acknowledging the Kwandamooka people, who are the traditional owners of the land in which we meet. I'd like to pay respect to their elders past and present and extend that respect to other Indigenous Australians who are present this morning. Just a quick reminder for members of the public who are here this morning for the general meeting of council. Public conduct at meetings is actually governed by Section 32 of our standing orders. And just a quick reminder for all members of the public, present at the meeting, not without prior approval of the chairman, make any audio or video recording or take any photographs, to remain quiet and not disrupt the meeting in any way. Not bring into the meeting any signs, placards or items that may cause a hazard or interfere with any person present. Be suitably dressed and please, if you could, turn all mobile devices to silent mode and leave the meeting to take any calls. It is my responsibility as chairperson to warn a member of the public at this meeting who is not complying with any of these requirements that may, without such warning, require that person to leave the meeting and not return for such period as the chairperson decides. And that period may include future meetings. Councillors, we have no leaves of absence that I've been advised of, so we'll move straight on to the devotional segment. And if I could ask a member of the Redlands Ministers Fellowship, Jean Milligan from Redlands Churches of Christ, to lead us in a devotional segment. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and thank you for the honour of being here with you and just leading you in a little reflection this morning. I'd like to tell you about something that I've been up to in the last couple of months. I've only just returned from the grand tour of Europe, my very first tour with my husband and myself to Europe. We didn't do the usual over 50s coach tour. We decided that we would plot our own itinerary and go by public transport and by Eurail around. So in doing so, we visited seven countries, and we didn't know the language in any of the seven countries that we visited. It wasn't quite as relaxing as a bus tour, but it was far more exciting. And I'm sure that we got to see some places and be in places that no Australian tourist has ever been, and we didn't expect to be either. Since I've come back, I've been asked several times, what was the best place you went to? What was the best experience you had? And without even thinking about it, every time I said Barcelona and Milan, or now I say Milano. And we saw some amazing places, some places that we could now tick off our bucket list that we'd been wanting to see and things that we'd been wanting to do for decades. And yet Barcelona and Milan came immediately to my mind. So I've been reflecting on why these two places. Barcelona was my very first stop, and it was after 24 hours of flights. It was, again, in a country where we didn't know the language. We had very sketchy instructions as to how to get to our hotel, and we had to use several forms of public transport to get there, not knowing how any of that transport worked. My husband had just thwarted an attempted robbery on us from a gang of teenagers. And so when we arrived at our hotel, we were very hot and shaken and exhausted. And so we plonked our bags down and off we went to discover the neighbourhood where we ended up. Just around the corner, there was a pastry shop come coffee shop called Le Pain Quotidien. For several weeks, we called it Le Pain Quotidien. But right at the end of my time in Europe, I learned how to actually pronounce it. But it was a lovely looking bakery shop, but the most wonderful thing was right in the middle of the store was a big long table, and they called it their communal table. And apparently there are lots of these Le Pain Quotidien stores all around the world, and at every one they have a communal table. So we sat at that communal table and other people came and joined us there. We couldn't speak their language, we didn't know them at all, but we felt welcomed and included and safe there. And we made it pretty much our home while we were in Barcelona. Every time we said, let's find a coffee, that was where we headed. And we regrouped and we felt like we belonged there. I would return to Barcelona in a heartbeat, and I think a lot of it had to do with that little coffee shop where we felt safe. The second place that I loved was Milan, which was our very last stop. And in Milan, we stayed in a B&B in suburbia. And it wasn't one of your upper-class suburbs of Milan. It was far from that. But the place where we stayed was overlooking a little square. There are lots of grand piazzas in Milan with beautiful buildings all around them and big open spaces. But this was a little community square. And on one side, there were service shops like a dry cleaner, a doctor, a pharmacy. Then there was a library and a school and a bus stop. And then there were two shops, almost identical, two coffee shops and ice cream shops right beside each other. And the two owners were best mates. And then on the other side was a church. And we stayed actually in a little apartment right above one of the coffee shops, and our bedroom window overlooked this little community square. People met there at all hours of the day and night, right up into the wee small hours. And they got their coffee, they sat out amongst the trees on the seats that were provided with all the playground equipment there. And at 10 or 11 o'clock at night, you could see 3- and 4-year-old children playing on the equipment with the bright lights on them. And their parents just talking and having coffee. It was the most wonderful feeling. And again, that was home to us, and we felt safe there. And even though we didn't speak the language, we sat with these people, and we felt included. It was my delight when I came home to find my rates notice waiting for me in amongst my mail. And it wasn't just for the rates, but it was because there were two newsletters in there. And the one from Karen said that we had welcomed citizens from 23 countries into the Redlands area to make them feel safe and secure. And then the one from Paul, my local councillor, who had just a little paragraph, Paul Bishop, just a little paragraph, and I want to know more about meeting places within our parks. And it just really struck a chord with me after seeing this amazing meeting place and feeling so safe there. So I want to know a lot more about that, and I'll watch it with interest. And I'm also really pleased to see how you as a council engage the community so often in decisions that are going to impact on their lives. So I'm really proud to be part of the Redlands. I'm here today as a Christian because I believe that faith in God always draws us into community, always has a public domain for where we can express our faith, because I believe we were made to live in community. God designed us to support and be there for one another. In the New Testament alone, there are 59 one another passages. Let me just read a few of them. Carry one another's burdens. In humility, consider others better than yourselves. Encourage one another. That's said several times. Love one another is said many times. Live in harmony with one another. Use whatever talents you have to serve one another. Be at peace with one another. Be devoted to one another. Live in harmony with one another. Accept one another. Community is God's heart. It was God's idea. And the very first church that's described in the book of Acts is a community of loving and sharing and justice and inclusion. I've sat on several boards in my life, and I know that at times the items on the agenda can just look like lots of figures and lots of words and lots of business. But in your discussions today, could I encourage you to remember the individuals that you each represent and consider how your decisions will impact on each of them? You've got a great responsibility and a great honour to make Redlands a wonderful place. And I'm just praying that you will do that today. So may I pray for you now? (Clears throat) Dear Lord, you are a Lord of great love and great compassion. I thank you that you have placed these people in such a place of responsibility where your love and compassion and wisdom and courage can be shown in the decisions that are made and the actions that are taken. Lord, today I ask that you would remind each of these counsellors of the responsibility that they have. Help them, Lord, to just not think about the paperwork that might be involved or think about the hard work that is ahead of them, but Lord, to remember those people who've put them in this place, those people in this community who are counting on them right now. So Lord, I ask that you will guard and guide and inspire our counsel today, and I pray these things in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen. I was just thinking, another thing that I found, the person who collected my mail kept all the newspapers that had been delivered, and in one from several weeks ago was the article about Johnny Depp, who said, "I want to live here." And you've got the right and responsibility to have everybody say that about the Redlands area. So may I encourage you in that. Thank you.
Councillors, the next item on the agenda is recognition of achievement, and I believe, Councillor Bishop, you wanted to refer to a member of your community.
Yes, thank you, Madam Mayor. It was this week when I received news from John Abraham of the very sad passing of his father, who has had a lot to do in the Thornside community, where he's lived for quite some time with his wife, Jan. So Sid Abraham was a very talented and wonderfully kind man who had a shed that was full of creations that he used to share with his grandkids, and was also an active participant in the Frank Street Bush Care, and was part of a very small group of people who met for quite some time. So I just want to acknowledge the volunteering capacity that he gave to our city, and to just also honour the ongoing relationship and friendship that he had with the person who sat in this chair before me, Helen Murray. I know he was a very important part to the history of Thornside, and I just want to acknowledge that for those members of the community who are interested, there is a funeral that will be held on Thursday the 30th at Bayside Uniting Church at 3 p.m. So just acknowledging his passing and condolences to his family. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Bishop. I haven't been advised. Oh, sorry, Councillor Beard.
Madam Mayor, if you just indulge me for 30 seconds, please. 7 months ago, our parks were in horrendous state as a result of continuous rain, and we weren't able to get to them and mow them. But I'd just like to congratulate and thank our outdoor park staff on behalf of all of us. I know that we all drive around the city, and I've been here a long time. I've never seen our parks in better shape or in better condition. They're absolutely brilliant. And I think on behalf of us all, I'd just like to acknowledge the wonderful work done by our outdoor park staff at this moment. They look fantastic.
I'm sure the CEO will pass that on to the relevant members of our staff. Councillor Bishop?
Thank you very much. I'd just like to acknowledge that on Friday of last week at Redlands Performing Arts Centre, there was a one-day conference which had delegates come from around Australasia just talking about creative ageing and the process of facilitating a connection between artists and the important work that artists can do in enabling our seniors to feel more welcome, to do with, as the Minister was just speaking about, in our communities, to age in place. And the keynote speech from a lady called Penny Eames, from an organisation in New Zealand, basically spoke about the importance of artists working with local governments and also the social services sector. It was just great to know that that conference was convened in Redland City and had great representation from people all across the region, and just want to congratulate RPAC for getting involved with community and particularly our seniors, so thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Bishop. Councillors, moving on with the agenda, item 5.1 is that we receive the minutes of the last general meeting on the 15th of July. Can I have a mover and seconder for that? Move, Councillor Edwards. Second, Paul, Councillor Gleeson. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried unanimously. Matters outstanding from minutes of previous general meetings, I'll hand over to our Chief Executive Officer to present.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Councillors, item 6.1, which was making of the local laws of Koala area mapping. Unfortunately, we had to, this week on short notice, cancel the meeting that was planned for you guys to go through that. That was due to some unforeseen circumstances, but we will have that on the agenda next week or the week after, and there is a lot of information which has been put together for you. So that one will continue on, and item 6.2 continues to lie on the table. Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Thank you, Bill. Our next section is public participation. I have been advised that we have a speaker, so councillors, if I could have a mover and seconder, the meeting adjourned for a 15-minute public participation segment to allow members of the public to address council on matters of public interest related to local government. Move, Councillor Gleeson, seconder, Councillor Bishop. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried unanimously. Just before I invite the first speaker to the microphone, you may have noticed the signage in our chambers regarding public participation at meetings. It is Council's usual practice to require any person wishing to address the meeting to state their name, their suburb, or their organisation that they represent and the subject they wish to speak about. The information is recorded in the minutes of this meeting, which is a public document available for inspection at Council's administration building and also published on Council's website. I need to advise you that this meeting is being recorded in audio video, and that by speaking you acknowledge and agree that the recording video may be replaced in the public domain. Just a reminder that any person addressing the meeting will stand unless unable to do so, act and speak with decorum, be respectful and courteous, make no comments directed at any individual council employee, councillor or member of the public, ensuring that all comments relate to council as a whole. As chairperson, I have some responsibilities. First is to consider each application on its merits and consider any relevant matter in making my decision to allow or disallow a person to address the local government. Secondly, to give priority to members of the public who have made written applications to the CEO to address the meeting. And three, determine the maximum number of speakers based on the number of persons wanting to speak and the time available. Each speaker has a maximum of 5 minutes, dependent on the number of speakers. And I also have the responsibility to withdraw the approval to address council before the time period has elapsed. Just a reminder, the debate or discussion cannot be entered into at this time. And if there is anyone that requires a hearing note, would you please let us know and we'll bring that microphone to you in the gallery. Okay, so if I could start with Danny Burke of Cross Lane, if you'd like to come forward, Danny, and to the microphone. So just a reminder, Danny, if you don't mind just stating your name, suburb or the organisation you represent, and you can start when you're ready.
Thank you, Mayor Williams. My name is Danny Burke, and as stated before, I live at Cross Lane in Cleveland. I represent a group of concerned residents in the Cross Lane, Little Shore Street area in regards to a proposed development at 48 to 50 Little Shore Street. Our concern has been for some time in relation to this development, and we see that there's an application already given preliminary approval for 12 three-storey, three-bedroom units with swimming pools in this vicinity that abuts the park at Raby Bay. Now, we've had several meetings at my house. We've had several letters sent to the council, and already Councillor Ogilvie and Mayor Williams have got this letter. Back in 2003, there had been a proposal to develop this site, and that proposal was based upon the widening of Cross Lane. Lane is a word like lane, a small street. And in this current proposal that is before the council that's got been given preliminary approval, there is no suggestion in that proposal that they will widen Cross Lane. I looked at the plans, and of the 12 units, and these are three-storey units, eight of them are coming off in front of my place in a laneway. There is another three or four coming off in front of Joe Bartlett's place, which is next to mine. Only one is coming off Little Shore Street. Now, this is preposterous because of not only our anxiety about the traffic in the street or the laneway, is that the improbability of the access into these areas without impacting on the current residents. So what we're here today, this morning, for is to seek a reassessment of this proposal. I know it's only got preliminary proposal, but the plans are already up and running, in so much as the signboard is up with the current plans in the front of the property. Already on the website, they are talking about so many have already been sold. And it gives us great concern that this could be a fait accompli without the widening of Cross Lane. I have with me today a couple of residents who I'm sure one at least, or maybe two, would like to say something further. But can I say this? In the opening address of Gene Milligan, it struck a chord, a very deep chord, in regards to community. Because my belief, along with a lot of people here, that you, the councillors, are the guardians of this area. We, as a community, are the guardians of the community. We have street parties, Christmas parties, we have gatherings. I mean, this is what Gene was talking about. Communities coming together. Things like you're talking about, these three-storey monoliths with swimming pools and holiday resorts, belong elsewhere, not where we are. It is a blight on the landscape to start with. It is a blight on the commitment that we as a council, or you as a council, should be looking at. So, only concluding what I am concluding, because I would like another resident to speak. In the meetings that we've had at our property in Cross Lane, we've had people who live there since 1928. 1928. What a history. I have people with me at the moment who have been there since 1949. So the longevity of these people is something to be proud of, not to be displaced. And that's what we're going to do. We're going to displace these sort of people. And it's unfair that this council should even consider this proposal in its first place. I understand the approval. It's because of the zoning. But what I don't understand is that the laneway is only a little narrow laneway, and to get in and out of my house with my couple of cars, I have to move my car across to the other side of the laneway. Think about the big proposal across the road where you've got a huge movement of traffic. So I implore everybody in this room this morning, listen to what Jean Mulligan said. I thought it was a brilliant speech. She doesn't have to travel overseas to see that. She has to see it here in her own backyard. And you as councillors should be the guardians of that. Thank you.
Thank you, Danny. I believe we must have some other speakers in the gallery, so if I could, just a show of hands, if I could. Sorry, if you'd like to approach. I think we've still got time. We've got a 15-minute session, Councillor Beard. So if you just approach, and if you could just state your name, suburb or organisation you represent, you may start.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. My name's Shane Rossi. I also live in the same area. I'm in Little Shore Street in Cleveland, and I'm representing our unique group of residents living in that enclave, which is the northern, well, the Cleveland Point residents that aren't waterfront that are north of Paxton Street. I would like to endorse what Danny said, but probably try and take some motion back out and get back to some facts about what the issues are, because we understand that the owner of this property has a right to develop, and we're not against development. At least most of us are not against development. We're against a development that either doesn't make sense, is trying to go against the intents of relevant codes, or is unsafe. And the main issue is that there is already a pre-existing traffic management issue there. That relates to the three roads that border this development, which are Cameron Street, Cross Lane and Little Shore Street. And that problem is that all the traffic that enters in and out of Cross Lane treat Cross Lane and Cameron Street as one road, and all the traffic, or the majority of traffic that enter in and out of Little Shore Street, which is the closed off end north of Paxton Street, they treat Little Shore Street and Cameron Street as one road. So we've got three roads being treated as two roads. So already the chance of accident are high, but somewhat tolerable because of the low amounts of traffic movement on a normal day. We're not talking about weekends when there's hordes of traffic to do with boats and whatever. So what we have is the issue that traffic management issue is going to be increased by potential of all of these additional dwellings. Now, council addressed this back over a decade ago, which Danny pointed out, back in 2003, addressed this problem by saying that any further development, expressly development, of 48 to 50 Little Shore Street would be contingent on an upgrade and a widening of Cross Lane. There's a written letter from council to say that. Now, all we're suggesting is that if there's going to be a development in 48 to 50 Little Shore Street, then as consistent with what council have already advised us, that there should be contingent on the upgrade and widening of Cross Lane. In fact, if we're going to really eliminate the traffic management problem there, the Cross Lane, or the Cross Lane section which runs east-west, should be realigned with Cameron Street, and that would not be that hard, and make that one street, not a lane. Because the issue with this development is that the fact that it's called a lane allows a developer to get away with much less regulation to do with the width of the road and the width of the verge. If this development, if these three driveways that Denning was referring to actually were coming onto either Little Shore Street or Cameron Street, the regulations for the road would be much different. The reality is now that Cameron Street services one property, Little Shore Street services 14 properties, and Cross Lane services 10 properties, which will go to 21 properties if this development goes ahead. Therefore, Cross Lane will service far more with a much tinier width of road than what the other two streets will. It just doesn't make any sense. We're concerned about the safety of our elderly residents, some of which Danny has pointed out are very old now, and our small children. When we moved into that area in 1994, we had small children, they've all grown up, but now there's a lot more small children in that neighbourhood than what there was back then. And this whole thing, it may look all right on the plan, but as soon as trees grow a bit, the blind spots on that traffic management issue that I've pointed out are going to be just a recipe for disaster. Some elderly resident or some child is going to get knocked over by a car. So thank you for listening. We welcome any of the councillors to come down and visit our beautiful little area and take a look in detail about what the problems are. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rossi. Do we have another speaker? Anyone else wishing to address? No, Lex? No? Okay. All right. Any other speakers in the gallery? There being none, I'll ask council if we could move back and proceed with the meeting proceedings. Thanks. Move Councillor Bishop. Second to Councillor Tolte. Those in favour? Those against, the motion is carried unanimously. Item 8.1, councillors, are petitions, and I believe Councillor Ogilvie, you have a petition to present.
Yeah, Madam Chair, actually, thank you. I'd like to present a petition from residents regarding traffic safety and parking concerns associated with MCU 013389, mobile dwellings times 12, at 4850 Little Shore Street, Cleveland.
Move, Councillor Ogilvie. You've got the motion,
Ask for leave to present the motion, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I think the residents have done a fine job already of putting forward their concerns, and for those of you who are further interested, there are actually details on the newspaper, which also does a nice job of putting forward the issues quite concisely. This is a historical area of Cleveland, and a quite beautiful area of Cleveland. It's at Cleveland Point, for those of you who don't know, as you go past Paxton Street, the Courthouse Restaurant on the right-hand side. It's the area out to the left-hand side that we're talking about there. And it is a heritage precinct, and with it being a heritage precinct, it has a heritage road infrastructure type arrangement. And this is unfortunately a fairly intense, you might say, modern development that is going into an area that really I don't believe is appropriate for that particular road configuration. Now, how they're going to shoehorn the development into that area, it remains to be seen. The zoning is what it is, and of course council is stuck as usual, well not as usual, but often as it is, between residents with expectations and a planning scheme that will limit what we can do. But I can only say that I think the residents well and truly have a case, and I hope that the council officers will take that on board as they go forward and attempt to condition the development and provide, you know, some satisfaction if possible to the residents' concerns.
Councillor, do you have a motion?
I'd like to move that the petition is of an operational nature, as it is currently being assessed under the Sustainable Planning Act, and it be received and referred to the Chief Executive Officer for consideration.
So move, Councillor Ogilvie, seconded Councillor Boglari. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. Thank you, Councillor. I haven't been advised of any other petitions, nor have I been advised by the presentation, so we'll go into the order of business. Is there any motion to alter the order of business, councillors, this morning? There being none, I'll just remind you, councillors, of your material personal interest and conflict of interest and your responsibilities under the Local Government Act 2009. A list of those responsibilities is in your agenda, and it's just really about declaring any material personal interest or conflict of interest at any item to be discussed at this meeting. So the next item on the agenda, councillors, is 11.1.1, and I'll hand over to Councillor Edwards to present the report. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Item 11.1.1, interim June 2015 monthly financial report. I'd like to move the officer's recommendation to note the reports.
Moved, Councillor Edwards. Seconded, Councillor Gleeson. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Edwards?
Just quickly, this is the first monthly report for the new financial year. It has been prepared using interim data to date. Interim year-to-date data and information as of 30th of June, which is subject to change following finalisation of accruals, deferrals and other end-of-year adjustments over the next few weeks. Being the first month's results, no trends can be ascertained, and while there is not a great deal that I'll refer to other than our cash holdings are $121.33 million, of which $76.81 million relates to constrained reserves. Probably if there's any questions, I'll defer to our Chief Financial Officer.
Any speakers against? There being none, I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. Thank you, councillors. Item 11.2.1, I'll get Councillor Beard to present this on my behalf. Thank you, Councillor.
Thanks, Madam Mayor. I'd like to move the officer's recommendation for item 11.2.1.
Moved, Councillor Beard. Seconded, Councillor Gleeson. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Beard?
Very briefly, Madam Mayor, as a result of a decision of Council made on the 22nd of April this year, that Council resolved to produce a new policy and adopt that policy for the establishment of a best practice protocol that provides a standard guideline, including governance and terms of reference, to support, guide and govern the information, the formation and operation of any current and future technical, community or industry groups. That may be formed for the purpose of advising Redland City Council. So this issue, this report, is offered as a response to that Council decision of the 22nd of April, and this will become the new policy for Council with regard to the way in which we deal with community groups, the reference groups.
Thank you, Councillor Beard. Any speakers against? Councillor Ogilvie?
Madam Chair, maybe you won't be voting against, but I do want to ask a couple of questions. This discussion, this paper came out of a discussion that we had about the Developers Industry Reference Group and the closed nature of that group, which was of a concern to a number of us, including myself. My question, I suppose, to officers is, How do you think the policy document would prevent a similar situation evolving again?
Through the CEO, I guess, or Nick?
Without wishing to discuss in great detail the history around that particular reference group, the policy is designed to make all of these community reference groups completely open and transparent. So you as councillors will have high visibility on a day-to-day, week-to-week basis about the frequency of the meetings. You'll be able to attend them as observers if you wish. You'll be able to see what information is coming out of these groups, which are primarily operational and are to inform the continuing business development of the organisation at that operational level. Additionally, information from these reference groups will continue to be published on Council's website, and members of the public will be able to have confidence that they can see how the community is being involved and engaged in helping Council to become more effective and efficient in its operations.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a follow-up question. I mean, the intent is great, but my concern, particularly, I mean, the thing with the Developers Industry Reference Group was that the discussions that were being had were closed, secret, if you like. And I look at dot point 3 in the policy statement around issues of transparency, and it doesn't suggest to me or make explicit to me that future discussions of that type or of any reference group will be open, transparent for the community to see. Is the intent of dot point 3 that they will be, that in effect that reference groups discussions will be minuted and published, or is that not the case?
Councillors will see from page 3, the table on top of page 3 of the document, the information that must be included in the public domain and information that may be optional. The reason that minutes are put in there as optional, and they will certainly be available to councillors, is to ensure that if there are members of the community reference group that have particular concerns about their views being placed in the public domain, then they have a right to ask council to respect that confidentiality. What will occur, though, is summaries of those discussions, and I think particularly those points that are taken forward, and they might be recommendations from a reference group, to officers to then go and consider, will certainly be clearly documented, and that information will be publicly available.
Madam Chair, and thanks for pointing that out. On page 3, I hadn't seen that it was optional, so that answers the question. I suppose on that basis, then I'm going to be voting against this. I don't believe that minutes for reference groups should be optional. I think if you have a discussion with a government in a quasi-government setting, the expectations from the community is that those discussions will be placed on the public record in one form or another. If people want to have you know, confidential conversations with their councillor or with the mayor or council officers, that's good and well, but you don't do it in quasi-government forums like reference groups. That's a place where community expects that the kind of restrictions that are put on us by the Local Government Act apply, and that is that, you know, it's there in the head of power, Local Government Act, that transparent and effective processes and decision making in the public interest is made transparent. And I just don't see that as an optional extra for a government. I mean, Right to Information Act, the whole spirit and intent of the Right to Information Act, for anyone who's read it, makes it pretty clear that the community has a right to information when it comes to government processes. And the idea that we can elect to choose or not to, you know, keep some of that information back, hold that back, is just, to me, not an optional extra. And I can't see how we can continue to maintain that view by putting it into policy documents. So on that basis, I'll be voting against it, Madam Chair.
Would you like to respond, Nick?
Only just very briefly, Madam Mayor. The table refers to the information which must be included in the, or should be included in the terms of reference. I think it's highly likely that the minutes, which will be, I guess, very much like the minutes of this meeting, it's not a he said, she said sort of minutes. It's really a summary of the items discussed and documentation of any advice or recommendations that are being taken forward. I don't see that this policy gets in the way of that happening, given the what you pointed out, Councillor, in relation to dot point three at the top in terms of transparency. So the policy may not be very explicit in terms of exactly everything that will be put on the website, but my expectation would be that there would be some summary of the group's activities, which may be in the form of minutes or maybe just a dot point list of those items that the group has contributed would be available publicly.
I mean, Madam Chair, if I can ask a follow-up question then. Is there, in the documentation, there's no notation of a must include regarding a summary of conversations or discussion points? Could we include that at this late stage? Because I think that would give, for me, a lot more confidence to the idea that we're at least intending to be as transparent as possible with our reference groups.
That's possible if councillors want to do that, and I can add a couple of words based on the intent from councillors today.
Sure. If you would like to perhaps work with that with council just to get that right. Speaker 4, Councillor Bogari. I'll take Speaker 4 at this point in time. Councillor Tolte.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I note the concern that's been raised, but I do have confidence that the document is designed to be a policy document that guides officers in the formation of groups to advise in operational matters across all areas of council. And I can imagine a number of circumstances where we might want to protect the privacy of people who are talking with officers in regard to operational matters. We have a lot of sporting groups that come in to advise us on how their community organisation works and how that interacts with council. I think that we have to be able to provide some flexibility for those groups to be able to speak freely with officers. And I can imagine situations like public and affordable housing, domestic violence advisory groups, aged care groups, where individuals might want to come and express their concerns through the group without their personal details being in the public domain. I have no problem if we add a dot point for a summary or whatever, that's fine, but I'm comfortable with the document the way it is, allowing good guidance and providing for the officers to have a policy that guides the activity.
Speaker against, Councillor Bishop.
Similar to Councillor Ogilvie, I'm not intending to vote against this. Certainly the spirit of it is welcome. And I'd very much like to acknowledge, first of all, the good work of officers in preparing this document, and also acknowledging that it's come from a notice of motion from Councillor Baglari, just asking for extra clarity around this issue of community reference groups, just having a policy so that we can be sure that we are clear with the community. This policy has got several levels of reporting requirements, and the terms of reference is the portion that will be publicly available. So that's one reporting back to the community. So they're publicly available on the website. That's what's referred to in that table under the terms of reference. There's another one, which is reporting back to officers. Obviously, the officers who are at the meeting will be present, but then there are other officers who may be affected. And then there's reporting back to councillors. Naturally, councillors and officers both live in a confidential environment. And confidentiality is important, as Councillor Baglari has suggested, both for private reasons and also commercial in confidence. And there are very good reasons why we do need to operate in that space. But I believe that for good governance, councillors who are, as the Minister said, we are the ombudsman, ensuring that what gets discussed is in the public interest. I believe that we should have full access to any of the information that gets discussed, or any of the actions that arise from the groups.
So, Councillor, just that is included, and you do, but I'm just, you are speaking against the motion, so I'm not quite sure. So
no,
you do get access to that information.
Yeah, I'd just like to clarify. I said I'm...
Happy to have it clarified.
Yeah, I've got some questions. I'll carry on, if I may. So what I'm trying to identify is that naturally I fully support the establishment of Council's agreed guiding principles to ensure, A, the transparent and active processes, and decision-making in the public interest, and then democratic representation, social inclusion, as part of the Local Government Act. And I also respect that this policy is part of the IAP2 spectrum of local governance, which is really about there being the right to use a group to inform them, then to consult with them, then to involve them, then to collaborate, and then to empower. The document suggests that these three groups in the middle are the ones that we're going to use these reference groups policy for. So I just want to acknowledge that as we go further along that continuum, we also go further up the opportunity for change, which is a good thing, but also the increasing opportunity for exposure to risk. And it's that I'd like to just clarify. Because under policy statement one, it suggests that reference groups will usually be formed where consultation, involvement or partnership are required. And I just note that in the reference groups, it doesn't suggest that we're going to identify where on that spectrum these groups are going to sit. And I'm just wondering, through you, if I may, Madam Mayor, if we're going to include that level of empowerment or collaboration.
I'll just refer you to page 1 of 4 of the attachment that actually talks about effective engagement, and clearly different reference groups will operate under different levels of the IAP2 depending on what they're trying to achieve. Mm. And it does actually embrace all 5 of those, not just the 3 in the middle as you suggested. So it'll be horses, I would have assumed, and I'll get the officers to confirm, it'll be horses for courses, because some bodies that have been representative of, have spoken to council over many years have been statutory bodies under an advisory group, or they've actually been just a more informal. So this gives that scope, and it won't be one or the other necessarily, just depending on the types of discussions that are required and how that will influence us as decision makers.
That's right.
So we are ultimately the decision maker, not these groups. They're just
right.
Really working with operational staff.
So my question then is, will we get will it be reported where they sit on that spectrum?
It will obviously be demonstrated by the information you get out of the meetings.
Yeah, and it's just in terms of setting up the open good governance, due diligence, good decision making in the democratic best interest, are we going to be clear about where they sit on that spectrum in the terms of reference? Question to officers?
Very simply, I don't see why not.
It makes
eminent sense to do that. Madam Mayor, if I may, I have shared some suggested wording with Councillor Ogilvie. Councillor Ogilvie has indicated he is in agreement. I don't know if Joyce is available to bring those words up.
Oh, but so I haven't finished.
My apologies.
That's right.
If you have a look at the first paragraph after the table on page 3 of the attachment, and you'll see a sentence that actually that's not the right one. So the second sentence in the first paragraph after that table says whether additional information and documents are published for a particular group will be defined in the terms of reference, and I'm suggesting that that sentence is added to with the words however a summary of the advice and recommendations provided to groups by council will be published. And I think that deals with the transparency issue, but also protects the confidentiality of individuals who prefer their names not to be associated with particular views that they express. My apologies for butting in, Councillor Bishop.
That's okay. Just point of clarity, I'm not speaking against, I don't wish to speak against.
Sorry, Councillor.
Sorry, I don't wish to vote against, but speak against, yes, you're right.
Sorry, repeat that.
I don't want to vote against, so I'd like to ask some questions, so I'm speaking against until I get clarity.
Okay, well, if you could make that clear up front, then I can make sure officers are ready to respond to your questions as opposed to giving you an opportunity to speak against. That's okay in future, but go for it, ask those questions.
Sure. So under policy statement 2, it says engage with groups to contribute to good decisions where it will assist council to make informed decisions and better outcomes. Council may form groups to seek input from outside the organisation. These groups can provide feedback and advice to council, and in some cases may partner with council to progress particular pieces of work. So the question there is, should we have a list that identifies when these cases of partnership to progress particular pieces of work arise, and should we have these action items listed in the must include section of the terms of reference just to ensure transparent decision making? That's the next.
Councillor, I'm surprised that you didn't raise this earlier with the officers and get this advice.
When I raised it yesterday, I was told to keep refraining from having my knickers in a knot, and it's not knickers.
Councillor.
I'm intending to wear them for the public interest. So
well, thank God for that. Councillor, no, that wasn't what you raised yesterday, with the greatest respect.
Well,
I was trying
to raise a number of things yesterday, but that's what happened, and I do wish to keep the knickers from being soiled.
Thank you, Councillor. Councillor? I appreciate your creative language in addressing this, but you had an opportunity yesterday and for
and
a week
I tried to use it.
And a week prior when this agenda came out to ensure that these questions could be answered, and if any changes were required, the officers could have provided that for all council to consider. That is the process.
And here's the opportunity before we go into
No, the opportunity law. Actually occurred a week ago. I'm more than happy to have them answered.
Thank you.
We don't need to have further discussion about what's written in the document, but if you have concerns, please raise them with the officers prior to this so we can all discuss them and get the motions correct so the intent of the motion is actually delivered to the community.
I did try when we met yesterday.
I don't, Councillor, you didn't raise this issue with the greatest respect. So through to Nick, you did not raise this issue yesterday.
Well, we can have a conversation about that. I don't think it'll take up people's time.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I think the policy allows and indeed insists on sufficient information being available both to councillors in the public domain, that on those occasions where members of the community reference group do partner with council to progress particular pieces of work, that will be very, very evident without the need to establish another list to burden you with.
Thank you very much. That's good to know. And I appreciate under transparency that council will be open and transparent about the creation, existence, purpose and arrangements.
Councillor, in the interest of time, and you have 5 minutes, as you recall, under the standing orders, you don't need to read us the document. Just
refer us
to the point, and I'm assuming we've all read the document, but if you don't mind, just because you're... 5 minutes is already up.
Thank you. Okay, so I appreciate that a list of groups will be available to councillors from ELT, and that ELT will notify councillors when a new group is established. But I just I wonder if I can't see any further guarantee that we'll get access to information. I just want to be sure that where there is stuff that's listed in the optional section of the terms of reference, that councillors will have access to that. I know that in commercial and confidence reasons, there may be reasons why withholding that from the general community on a website might be important, but for councillors to be in that commercial and confidence zone where we should be able to see that, just in the public interest.
The CEO is going to respond, Councillor.
Thank you.
Councillor, I would like to, just for the record, point out that you can request any information under a reasonable request in writing to the CEO, and that will be forthcoming. In my tenure here, I have yet to not provide that information to any councillor that I'm aware of or any of our staff. Sometimes there is accounting, you know, for different views on information. There may be perceived that they haven't got it all, but we will always provide that information. We will always put caveats onto it if it is commercial in confidence for not to be released. And again, I think we've demonstrated over the period of time and the matter that actually raised this has been circulated to councillors for their full disclosure. So I'm yet to see, but that's an obligation under the Act. So should you require any information on any information, the only out that council has from an executive point of view is if it is unreasonable, and then that would be referred back to the mayor to make a decision as to whether it is not relevant or is creating a whole heap of work that is unreasonable burden on the administration.
Thank you. I just in terms of good governance, open transparency, I want to make sure that we, who are the elected representatives of the community, do have access to that information. And while we can ask questions, the concern going forward could be that if there are a great number of these groups, it would be very difficult to keep across all of that information and know what to ask and which rock to lift up to ask a question about it, unless we actually had a place where that information is available.
So, Councillor, you've been given an answer, and I'm going to ask you to wrap up because you've had in excess of 5 minutes now.
Okay.
And
thank you.
Thank you.
So I appreciate from the officer that there's an intent to do that. Just finally, under transparency, will it be made clear that the officers, the lead officers who will write the terms of reference?
Point of order. Understanding orders 11.6, each speaker is restricted to not more than 5 minutes, and we've heard a lot of information here that I believe the councillor could have ascertained before this meeting and spoke to officers. And I just request that the chair speak to maintain that there's a 5 minute limit on each speaker.
Thank you, Councillor Edwards. If you wouldn't mind just wrapping up, thank you, Councillor Bishop. We appreciate you've got one more question to be answered.
Yeah, thank you.
That will be it, though.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Mark, and I do apologise for not having done that beforehand. The question is really about the selection process, because the lead officer will be the one who will write the terms of reference with that group. Will the process around choosing the group members be made clear to councillors, at least, about just to make sure that we have got as robust democratic representation? I'm just wondering if that will be reported, because it's not mentioned here.
Happy to answer that one, Madam Mayor. I think councillors, I've mentioned this to you before, but these are broadly around operational issues. So we are not expecting to broadly advertise the process, who applied, who didn't, and so on. As the CEO mentioned earlier, you are all entitled to information whenever you seek it, and there is a specific policy, the acceptable guidelines policy, that covers that. This is a policy really about openness and transparency of what happens in this organisation with the general community who we serve. The purpose of the policy is not, this policy, is not to govern the access that you have to information. And it would be a very sad day if in every policy that we had to put a paragraph in there about how officers shared information with councillors. So yesterday I gave you a commitment that there would be that openness of that information for you, so that you will have high visibility of that. You will be able to, under the acceptable request guidelines, go and talk to the senior personnel who are setting up these groups. You will be able to attend groups as observers, those issues that you're particularly interested in. But I will remind you that these are operational groups, and those are really for the managers and staff of the organisation to work through. So I hope that's given you some confidence in relation to the way forward with this.
Thank you, and I'll now support that. Thank you.
Councillor Boglari, are you speaking for, or have you got a question?
Yesterday in the pre-general meeting, I brought up on page 3 of 4 the actions and responsibilities, and it was suggested I talk about it today at that meeting. So I'd just like to just ask through you to Nick now.
Question.
Yeah, my question through you was with the actions and responsibilities, it seems to all lie with the ELT in those first 5 dot points, and my concern was I think councillors should also be included in that. And I was wondering if you could change that wording just to include... You sort of gave me assurance verbally that we would be, but I would just like yesterday when we were getting some clarity, so I was just wondering if that could be added in there, please.
Madam Mayor, my recollection of yesterday's conversation was the assurance was around visibility of the information to councillors. These are operational groups. If councillors wish to be involved in the formation of these groups, ultimately that's your entitlement to do so. But I would strongly recommend not, because these are operational groups. They are dealing with operational matters, and my advice is really you should trust the executive leadership team to be able to make decisions in relation to those operational matters. That's what you pay the CEO and myself and my executive colleagues to do. There will, however, as I mentioned earlier, be a high level of visibility in terms of the formation of the group, so you will be notified. There is no reason why you could not suggest to the executive through some of the forums that you have that the usefulness of a particular community reference group in the future. But these are really operational matters, and my strong recommendation is that you leave it to the employees to manage this.
Just through you, this document does give me some assurance we won't, you know, that these groups won't be set up at least with some transparency and everything to the public as well as councillors. But twice today we've been referred to as the guardians, and I do sort of take that responsibility. We are, the butt stops with us in everything. So undertake an annual, sorry, I'm just a little bit ill today, my voice isn't quite right. Undertake an annual review of the listed groups, those sort of annual reviews, and whether they have actually achieved the outcomes we suggested. I think councillors should be involved in that. And that's why I was just wondering if it can have ELT, including councillors, to come to us with the wording there, if other councillors around would agree to that. I'm not sure you can do. On page 3 or 4, which I said before, under ELT, ELT is going to undertake the annual review, approved formation. I think councillors should be included in those decisions.
I think what this would suggest is the officers will actually put the information together, which will be provided to us, because we're not in a position to do the review ourselves. That would be how I read it.
Like if the Capital Works group, you know, that comes back to us at the end, or the economic group comes back to us at the end of the year, and we actually get what outcomes were achieved. I think it's up to councillors to decide then, you know, the benefits and the outcome, the cost of the community.
So can I just
not just
can
ELT?
Can I just clarify something? There are some groups that are set up by council as councillors, which are the groups you just referred to, and there are some groups, reference groups, that have been set up to, I guess, progress organisational improvements, which are operational officers that working with their stakeholders. So they're two very different groups. So anything council sets up, we obviously will get information back on a regular basis, and we can make our judgment calls, and each and every one of you can bring a motion to council if you're not happy with it, or we can have that discussion. But I think they're very different, so we will get that information back, and as council has already demonstrated, you've been invited to those various groups. You can see how they operate. They are set up by us as 11 people. These other groups aren't set up by us. They're set up by the organisation.
But doesn't this policy refer to both those groups?
No.
So where does the DIRG stand then? Because that was a group
that sits in here. It was a decision of council way back when to engage with that industry, but it wasn't actually council that set up that group.
No, but with a group such as that, I think councillors should be involved in any continuance or any annual review.
This policy allows that to happen.
No, we're delegating that to the ELT.
No,
so
they review
it. Read it.
They review it, and if you aren't happy with an operational situation, we can bring it to council and direct staff accordingly.
Well, can I just have some assurance that is the process? Because when I read this, it says ELT.
Madam Mayor, if I can just clarify, the intent of the policy is for ELT to undertake the annual review of the groups. So that will include seeking information from the officers that are managing those groups to make sure that they are continuing to perform a valuable function. And if they're not, ELT will make a direction to discontinue them. That information will be available to councillors, but my recommendation is that councillors are not involved in that operational decision-making process. However, there is always the opportunity for any councillor or group of councillors through notices of motion and other means to bring forward into this chamber any particular matter. So, given that there, at any one time there could be a reasonable number of these groups, there may be one that causes some concern or specific interest for a councillor. You have the ability to, after discussing it with one of the executive team, bring a notice of motion to this chamber seeking for greater councillor input, and that might be into a continuation where ELT has decided not to continue. It might be to a discontinuation where ELT has not made that decision, or it may be in some other aspect, including broadening or lessening the terms of reference of a group.
So you're suggesting rather than having councillors included here, we do it on an individual basis when the need arises, which to me wouldn't be as efficient, but can I see if I've got any support in the room to have councillors included in that at all? Through you, am I able to see whether we can get that wording put in?
Happy to take a straw poll, but I am actually concerned as to where this discussion is going, because I'm seeing a whole new form of government being set up here called polyocracy, where I'll take the straw poll and I'll save my comments. So straw poll for those who actually want to involve council in the operational elements of these groups in the decision making part. Yeah, well this is operational.
It's those dot points there, the annual review of the groups or the formation. That's what I'm asking in the terms of reference. I'm asking that councillors be involved in that, which is not a plumber telling me how to do a drain. It's the actual policy part of it. No, because it doesn't.
I'll take a straw poll, councillors, on that. Those who are in favour? That doesn't get the Guernsey, I'm afraid. Okay, so we're back with the motion, which is... We've got a suggested amendment up there, I believe. Or is that just adding to the report?
That's adding to the policy, so the motion would need to be amended, Madam Chair, to say that council resolves to adopt the community reference group policy as amended.
Okay. So have we got any other speakers for this motion, councillors? We've got to go back for a sum up, but we also need to make sure we've got the amendment in mind, because it has to be accepted. Look, if I hand back to Councillor Beard, I think what we've done here today is completely confuse and probably unempower the discussion, not the policy, because I've actually supported this policy and suggested that Councillor Bulgari include some of these elements in her recent amendment. But it's really important for us as the board or as councillors to put faith in the people we employ, and if you don't like what they're doing, there are processes. If they don't meet the standards and they don't meet the code of conduct, they are probably more subject to the scrutiny of a code of conduct than anyone around this table. And I don't believe there's anyone in this organisation in my 12 years that has actually gone against council policy as such in developing relationships with people. They need to develop a relationship so they can be effective in the work we do for our community. Let me make this very clear. These reference groups are not, unless empowered by us or a resolution of council, decision-making bodies. We are the decision-making bodies. We set the policy and we set the way forward. These guys just set these reference groups up to help them inform and do business better. I think it's a big issue for communities that... they get frustrated that governments don't get things done. And what we've seen here today, in the interest of the community, they don't get things done in the interest in the community. This discussion is telling us that we're going to make it harder for our officers to deliver, because we want to be involved in the ticking of boxes and crossing of boxes that really have no impact on our community, only perhaps deliver better processes that This is simply a discussion about how we let our officers operate. If you don't like how it's happening, you go to the CEO, and his job is to make sure this organisation runs effectively. I know a lot of it's been centred around the discussion around the DIRG, but I'll just give you one very clear example when we're trying to deal with issues that outside of that scope. Recently, we talked about erosion, foreshore erosion management, and there are engineers from other departments of government that sit around this table and are here at the blessing of the minister that cannot speak on behalf of the minister but bring a whole heap of technical experience and life experience in that role to the table. And I've seen it for myself that they are very cautious about what they say because they could be compromising their minister's position unwillingly. So I think you've got to have a very broad mind about how these groups work and not just try to make it something about one group that you didn't particularly like and make this fit for everyone else. So I think this document is broad enough. It's got all the elements of consultation through the IAP too. It allows for the flexibility of different organisations to work with our officers in making sure that we can deliver for our community. And I just think that the discussion's probably gone a little bit off course on that. This is operational. We are the decision makers. They are not the decision makers. They abide by the policy and the direction we set. So I want to make sure the organisation can remain effective and not being answering for, you know, it's time for me, you know, can I go to the loo, by the way? I work here at council and we have to tick a box. It's unempowering for the officers, and I think it also tells some of the people in this organisation who work very hard that we don't trust them to do the job that they're employed to do, and that's certainly not the case from me. I'm obviously the CEO, and I have discussions about how we can do things better for our community all the time, and I'm very confident that that's where we're heading. And this policy allows all of that to continue without getting into micromanaging the operational elements of the organisation. So I'll hand back to Councillor Beard.
Thanks, Madam Mayor. Much of what you said I was about to say, we have had a very open and transparent discussion about this issue, but I would just say, you know, speaking from my perspective, and I know from all the councillors here, we're all time poor. I don't have another 5 hours a week to get involved to this degree of minutiae in these very tiny reference groups, and I don't think any of us do, and I think we need to seriously avoid the urge to micromanage the organisation to the degree that some have suggested here today. I have total confidence in the ELT to run this process, and I don't need to involve myself in the minutiae of it. And I'm happy to recommend the officer's recommendation.
So we have an amended motion.
Happy to accept the amended motion.
Okay, so and the seconder is happy with that as well? I think it was Councillor Gleeson, wasn't it? Yeah, okay. All right, was that... Oh, look, I think it's not a fundamental change. You're happy, Councillor Ogilvie, for them to accept that as their motion? Okay, well, with that, councillors, if I may, I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried. Sorry? Motion is carried. Those in favour, please. Councillor Bishop, Gleeson, Beard, Tolte, Elliott, Edwards, Hewlett, Hardman and Williams. Those against is Councillor Ogilvie and Councillor Boglari. Thank you, councillors. No, Hewlett voted for it. I think, yep, I've got that. I'm seeing it from up here, so. Item 11.3.1, Councillor Tolte.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I call councillors' attention to item 11.3.1, which is decisions made under delegated authority for Category 1, 2 and 3 development applications, and ask that these be noted.
Move Councillor Tolte. Seconded Councillor Gleeson. Would you like to speak to Councillor Tolte?
No, thank you, Madam Mayor. It's all in the report.
Any other speakers? There being none, I put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried unanimously. Councillor Tolte, 11.3.2.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I call councillors' attention to item 11.3.2, which the appeals list is current at the 16th of July, and ask that this be noted.
Move Councillor Tolte. Seconded Councillor Edwards. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Tolte?
No, Madam Mayor, the councillors have been updated on those that will change over the next month, and this is just current to the 16th of July.
No other speakers, councillors? I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried unanimously. Item 11.3.3, Councillor Tolte.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. This is a application. Well, first of all, I will move the officer's recommendation for item 11.3.3.
Move Councillor Tolte, seconded Councillor Edwards. Councillor Tolte, would you like to speak to it?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. This is a matter that was a impact assessable application and has been called up to Council for decision. I won't speak too broadly on it. I might wrap up at the end, but I believe the local councillor for the area would like to speak to it.
Councillor Edwards.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I'd like to thank the officers for this report and the detailed assessment they have carried out. On behalf of the residents who would have been impacted by this proposal, I thank the officers for their considered recommendation to refuse the application. There are many planning issues why this application is not appropriate for this location, which is a residential area, and the existing zoning of this site is medium density residential. A service station is inconsistent use in this zone. A 7-day service station operating 24 hours a day, lit up at night, would have a significant adverse impact on the residents of this area. In addition, the traffic flow and access to and from the site are problematic. That raises a range of concerns for me and also concerns from many of the residents who have written to me. I'm not against a new service station for Redland Bay. In fact, I'd like to see one built as Redland Bay is a growing area. However, a service station needs to be located appropriately. There is appropriate development and inappropriate development, and as a council we strive to make the best decisions for our residents. The best decisions for our residents is for us as councillors to support the officer's recommendation and refuse this application. I'd also like to take this opportunity to thank the many residents who I've spoken to, and in particular Glenda Chapman, whom I've visited several times, for their patience in this matter. Council must fairly assess all development applications, and this does take time, and during that time I know many of you had feared the worst but hoped for the best. I hope you can take comfort in today's decision.
Thank you, Councillor Edwards. Any speakers against? There being none, I'll hand back to the portfolio spokesperson, Julie Tolte. Sorry? Oh, I don't think we're just going for and against, Councillor.
Well, I have a question.
Okay. Question?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. The question I've got is, I've spoken to planning officers about other developments in my area, and there is a mechanism in our assessment process that this is inconsistent in impact. Why do we even proceed with an assessment? We should have just said to the applicant, go away and start again. We don't have to assess it. There is a mechanism in our assessment process that we can say we're not going to consider it.
Excuse me, Madam Mayor, that's actually addressed in the report, that it is not inconsistent.
It is inconsistent.
Thank you, councillors.
How could we ever consider a garage in a...
Any application, my understanding, and I'll refer to the officers, under the Sustainable Planning Act, we have no choice into what applications we can or cannot accept, and we must assess them.
Not
and
the
that's
information
what,
I have.
Well, if you want to refer, I'll refer to the officer, but also to the document.
Councillor, I know for a fact our council officers in the planning group under David Jeans and the various team do work very closely with the applicants at pre-lodgements and those type of things, trying to convince them of the suitability of some of the applications to try and streamline it so that they're not putting those in. But as the Mayor pointed out, ultimately, should they have a different view to us, they have a right to put that in and we have an obligation to assess them. So again, all I can say is that under all the pre-meetings and the work that David and the team have done, over the past 2 years is to try and streamline those processes, but ultimately the applicants have the right to make an application.
Thanks, Philip. I understand that, but I was told by a planning officer that we have a trigger or a mechanism to be able to say, you know, go away, there's no chance. I mean, it's medium density, I don't even know why we'd even look at putting a service station there. I'm not going to drag on about it, but I just thought it needed to be highlighted. Thank you.
Well, Councillor, I think we'll have that record corrected because my understanding is under the Act, we don't make those choices. The Act determines how we have to assess applications And unless it's completely exempt through the regional plan, my understanding is that we accept those applications and we're required to assess them on their merit, and which doesn't always fall into line with what might be on one side of the planning scheme. So it is a very, very grey area, very difficult to communicate broadly because planning is quite complex. But my understanding is that we have to accept every application that's made to us and assess it accordingly. Back to you, Councillor Tolte.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Just in response to that, while it is inconsistent with the zone, and I'm not a planner, but as it's been explained to me, I'll try to relate that, it was incumbent upon the applicants, they were perfectly entitled to put their application in, it was incumbent upon them to overcome that inconsistency by showing through their application that there was an overriding need for the service in the area. And that is how they were able to put an application in, and that was part of the assessment. I would note for the councillors that the officer's recommendation is to refuse, and it is to refuse on grounds that the proposal conflicts with the specific outcome for the density in the residential zone code. The specific outcome for the medium density residential zone code states land in the proximity of centres, services and facilities and public transport is maximised for dwelling units that result in compact housing form. The overall outcome for the medium density residential zone code is not met. The outcome for the service station code states that use should be complementary to established centres. It has not met that. The access and location of the site does not comply with the specific outcome. The development conflicts with overall outcomes in the median density zone code. The application has not provided adequate grounds to justify the approval despite the conflict with the planning scheme. Point seven is the point that relates to Councillor Hewlett's question. So they have not proven that overwhelming need enough to overcome those other points in the planning scheme. And therefore it has resulted in a recommendation from the officers for refusal. With that, I recommend that the councillors support the officers' recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you, councillors. I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried unanimously. Thank you, councillors. Moving on to item 11.3.4. Thank you, councillor. Thank you. If we could stay focused on our agenda, that'd be great. Councillor Tolte, back to 11.3.4.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I call councillors' attention to item 11.3.4, which is the Redland City Economic Development Advisory Board revised terms of reference, and ask that they move that the officer's recommendation.
Move, Councillor Tolte. Seconded, Councillor Elliott. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Tolte?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. This is simply a revision of one section of the terms to allow officers to look at the remuneration of the board members. We need very much to be able to attract the best and the brightest to this committee, and this will just give some flexibility to the officers in doing so.
Speaker against, Councillor Ogilvie.
Madam Chair, this is just another sort of step in the ongoing disappointment that is our efforts in the economic development space, frankly. We had an economic development strategy that took forever to get to us and was an ugly pregnancy with a lot of community discussion and dissension. And then we got an economic strategy that had no action plan other than to set up this economic development board. And now, having taken so long for it to get to us and have only one action, it's now 7 months later, having decided to establish this board, that we come back to councillors and say, sorry, we can't do it under the terms that we asked you to establish it under. Frankly, it's terrible. We've already got an economic development board that is going to have way more responsibilities, a number of responsibilities that should be given to council officers. We've stepped out of the space of helping businesses directly by stopping our support for the Small Business Advisory Service. And we're completely inert, completely inactive in the development, economic development space at this point in time. I think the business community will be saying, "What's going on?" Frankly, and you know, the reason for us having done this is because we didn't set up the terms of reference right in the first place on the advice of our council officers, and now we're being asked to give an open checkbook to the CEO so that he can negotiate fees with external candidates.
frankly, what have we been doing in the economic development space? If you're in the business community and you're looking at this, you've got to be thinking this is Keystone Cops stuff, frankly, and I'll be voting against this, just as I voted against the economic development strategy that decided that we should set up this board in the first place.
Speaker 4. Sorry? Speaker 4.
Okay. Speaker 4. Yeah. I am going to vote for this because we've got to do something. But I just wanted clarity. Yesterday we got, there was sort of like a limit, wasn't there? It isn't an open checkbook that we're giving you. There was,
the CEO made
there, was definite, there were definite guidelines given us to us yesterday on that.
There are standards, yes. You weren't in attendance at that meeting when the discussion occurred.
Well, in the office's recommendation, I don't see the guidelines.
There was an undertaking given by the CEO. I'm happy for him to repeat that.
That's what. Can that be included in here to give that certainty to councillors then, if needed?
It's up to you, councillors. Again, councillors, without going into the fine detail, there are standard guidelines around both a state government and good governance practice through Australian Institute of Company Directors. There is also case studies around. The study that I said to you is that I gave you some indicative figures that we have paid our other boards, which I do not think is appropriate to divulge in the public space around those numbers, but they will be in guidelines with them. The $175 a day, which was the one put in the first per meeting, was just unrealistic. It was an attempt to try and get the altruistic good nature of some of our economic and our community. That has proven to be rather difficult in the current environment and to attract the appropriate people. I think the question you're raising to was Councillor Elliott, said about, I'm sorry, Councillor Elliott, to quote you, to give a figure of around $50,000 into this. What I said is that we would need to pay a chairman of this committee, and if you're looking at decent economic development, $175 a meeting is not going to cut it with some of those. So there are standard guidelines around. You will see on the state website, state government website, the size of organisations and the size of the turnover that they're anticipating, the various reference boards within those. So that was the commitment that I gave that to do that, and that I also said in the meeting yesterday, which I failed to do yesterday but will do straight after this meeting, is email to you a commitment to give you the figures that we agree with those people prior to me finally signing off on those dollar values. But again, I would imagine you are looking, when you look at the quality of the people that you want, and I use the example of Melbourne, and also the Sunshine Coast, that any decent consultant with economic credibility and credibility in fields are on around $2,000 to $3,000 a day, which is the standard rates across the things. So those are the sort of indicative figures we'll have to negotiate on. Does that answer your question, Councillor Bolgari?
Speaker against, Councillor Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I'd like to speak against this and also acknowledge that I voted against the economic development strategy and the establishment of the panel. But can I just clarify, is this advisory group going to be established and managed under the same terms of reference as the previous, as we spoke about previously?
The terms of reference have been voted on by this council and adopted by this council, so they're the terms of reference that they will operate under.
And they're separate to what the agreements
are? It's all in here, but just let me remind you, as I said earlier, that there will be bodies or reference groups that are set up by council, which we've decided upon in this case, and there will be others that will sit under the operational scope of the organisation just to help with process, etc.
Councillors, I'll draw your attention. There are two terms of references in the pack, one which was the previous one which is the current one. And if you'd have a look at the one that is version 1.07, the terms of reference are very clear in there. What we are seeking is under that terms of reference, you will note, I'm just trying to find the section, the remuneration section is the one that we are proposing to change. So that terms of reference are clearly there and is now fully in the public domain.
Thank you. And just further clarification, CEO, through you, Mayor, is in terms of the notification to the community of the expenditure for the meetings, there's a an amount that will get recorded, which is for meetings, but then there's another amount for remuneration, for meeting preparations. That answer
was given to you yesterday as well. It's a total figure.
Yeah, and I'm just wondering where that will be reported.
Again, Councillor, we report under the standard accounting reporting regime for our annual report, along with the state government, and do best practices. So those, the audit committee and our independent auditors review those chart of accounts. So we comply with those. So should you wish to include anything further and any level of detail beyond that, that is a notice of motion that you would need to put through. So if you have a look back at our past annual reports, we do those, and future annual reports will reflect expenditure. But it will not be down to an individual committee of the cost to an individual.
Okay, thank you for answering those questions. I'll now go to speaking against and the reasons why. To my mind, to open these commercial and confidence sessions where important corporate information is shared with...
Commercial and confidence? Sorry, what are you referring to, Councillor?
The advisory group will...
Could you refer to your document in the terms of reference where it talks about commercial and confidence, because I haven't read that.
Well, I'm presuming that there will be information shared with the representatives from these eight sectors that have been identified in the
Councillor Elliott, point of order.
Yeah, I think we've wandered off the subject. This is about the fee realignment, not anything else.
Yep. I rule on that. So, Councillor, could you please refer to the item we are discussing today.
Thanks. I think a moment ago, Madam Mayor, you said that communities get frustrated when governments don't get things done, or that governments don't get things done. And experts are very cautious about what they say when having to answer back to council. I think what we're seeing here...
Just a reminder on that point of order, we're talking about the remuneration.
We are.
Some of us are.
Yeah. I haven't had a chance to get to that point.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm asking you to get to that point, please, Councillor, because the point of order has been called and I ruled on it.
Thank you. So what I've just said is that communities get frustrated when governments don't get things done. And here we are, without action plans, now intending to pay...
Councillor, you are now trying to debate the previous discussion. No. Yes, you are, Councillor. I'm ruling on it, Councillor. We're talking about the remuneration... and changing that in the terms of reference, and that's it.
And I'm encouraging councillors to not support this, because if we don't have a strategy in place that should be able to be run off with by the community, the sectors should be able to go out and do it themselves, I'd be happy to fund something that's external to council, but for us to expect these officers, these consultants to get paid, and the fact that we're having to pay them extra because they don't like to have to support to report back to a government body, we're losing money and we're spending it in an area where...
Point of order, Councillor Elliott, your point of order.
Thank you, Mayor. We've wandered off the subject again, twice.
Yeah, okay. I think
we need to stick to the fees. You know, this is getting uglier by the minute.
Thank you, Councillor Elliott. So, Councillor Bishop, I'm going to now offer it Speaker 4. Councillor Elliott.
Thank you, Mayor. Straight up with the committee, I'm not very supportive of economic development advisory boards, committees, and I've been on a few in the past in this council. However, council has made a decision. The CEO, we've come back, you know. In past times, we've had very good people. Peter Searson, I see Peter regularly, a very, very smart guy. They came on for nothing. Those days have gone. And I raised the figure yesterday. I have no bones about putting that CEO's out of me on that one. You've got to pay that sort of money. And this is not per person. This is for about nine people. And as indicated by the CEO yesterday, the chair usually gets 50% more than the others. So it's an easy sum. If Councillor Dowling was here, he's not high on economics, but he could work it out. Former Councillor Dowling. but these are things, and you know, I'm gritting my teeth saying this, that I'll give it a go. But I've also asked that we should look further afield than just the Redlands, so we're not doing the homegrown thing again. We look at people outside this city and get the best advice we can afford. I'm not going to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars, but I think $50,000 is a... What orders we call?
I'm only joking. Yeah, the subject.
I'm trying to stick to the... Oh, sorry. I think this is worth it. And if we give it a shot, we'll know where we're going.
Thank you, Councillor Elliott. Speakers against? No further. So if I could just quickly say a few words, because there have things there have been statements made in here that I just think need some quick clarity. Firstly, this process was put forward by businesses in Redlands, and they wanted to have an independent body, which through council resolution we have granted them, and they specifically also wanted to own the action plans, because it's no point council trying to tell businesses how to do business, because we're not good at that. We're actually better at getting out of the way. And so that is the framework that we've adopted. I just want to correct some of the other points that have been made about council stepping away from supporting small business. That is not the fact. The fact is that council filled a gap for many, many years supporting small business through various programs. And finally, the federal government came on board, as they should have, and are now funding a similar, if not broader, program which supports our local businesses, and I don't see that our ratepayers would appreciate duplication of that. And I say to anyone that's been around this table long enough who says that you know, we are doing economic development bad, I say to you, well, what have you been doing? Because that this city needs jobs. This city needs jobs to get rid of the congestion that I hear about every day. This city needs jobs so that my kids and your kids and grandkids have an opportunity to live, work and play in this city. And unless we have business and smart people, wherever they may come from, guiding the economic future of this city, it ain't going to happen. And as was said yesterday, if you pay peanuts, you get monkeys. And if I could just add, the reason why we had $175 put as a remuneration was because we sat around this table, councillors, each and every one of us, and we worked and compromised on what we should do in this space. And that was a figure that was agreed upon. And each and every one of you had an opportunity to change it there or do nothing. The do nothing for me is not an option. $175 was where we fell, because we felt that we wanted to see if we could get that gratis, great experience. But we have an opportunity now to get good people from wherever they may be to help guide the future of the economic future of this city. And for anyone that says they don't like it, I say to them, will you tell me how you're going to do it better and what you've done to date? So with that, I'm going to hand back to Councillor Tolte, and I look forward to being able to go forward with a reasonable amount of money to get good people to sign up for this board, be it the chair, and be it the various members of the industry sectors, the representatives, wherever they may be.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. So in summing up, I'll just provide for the record the paragraph that we're referring to in this change. It says, independent members of the board will be paid remuneration commensurate with experience and knowledge. The CEO will negotiate fees with external candidates on this basis. The fee for each board member will include meeting preparation and reimbursement of all reasonable travel and out-of-pocket expenses relating to meeting attendance. The fees will be reviewed every 2 years from appointment. All councillors and council staff will receive no additional remuneration for this board. And with that, I recommend the officer's recommendation to the councillors. Thank you.
Put the motion, councillors. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried. Those in favour? Councillor Gleeson, Councillor Beard, Councillor Tolte, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Hardman, Councillor Boglari, Councillor Williams. Those against? Councillor Bishop, Councillor Ogilvie. Thank you, councillors. Councillors, next item is a mayoral minute, and I did distribute that for you yesterday for some discussion. I'll put that motion to you. I'll just get that up on the board. Up there. Oh, you don't have it? Okay. Just as we put that up on the board, it's been, just start talking to it if I might, in regards to some of the challenges we have as a city within a confined space, and with a great sense of community, both from delivering events in the city, as well as our sporting groups and the competition I've seen for space, particularly made very clear to me recently with talking to some of the users, the sporting ground users at the Redlands Showgrounds, touch football and soccer for that matter, and the struggle they have with that
which was traditionally an event space, now being, challenged for their own space for sporting fields. It's been an ongoing issue for a while, and I think it's fair to say that we've got some great events that have been attracted to our city. We've actually employed someone specifically not only to support our existing community events but to attract other events of significance to this city. It has a great economic impact. It introduces people to the wonderful sense of community we have here when they come to experience whatever event it might be. And now the challenges are to be able to sustain that by having an event space that can actually also allow for our sporting groups to continue to do the great work they do. So the motion as it stands basically asks officers to go away and do some work, see what we can do better in making sure that our sporting grounds are actually being used 100%, an audit that just demonstrates that perhaps there's spaces where we can encourage further sporting opportunities. At the same time, it looks at some of the work we did with the previous government in regards to using state government school education land. We had that pilot in Victoria Point State High School, and I know there's been some other sporting groups move into Capella Bar State College. There are opportunities for sporting organisations to use those areas which remain vacant most weekends, and also build those partnerships with their schools. So I'd like to understand how that's progressed, and if in fact this current government would like to continue down that road, and at the same time be able to continue to attract some of the great events that we are heading for in the next few months, thanks to the tourism team and our events officer. So the motion is there in front of you, councillors, and I'm happy to take any speakers. Thank you. Councillor Beard.
Madam Mayor, thank you. I'd like to firstly thank you for bringing this forward. I think this is a valuable piece of work and a timely piece of work. My question would be through you to the CEO. Bill, do you think that it would be wise to add some budgetary consideration to this minute? This is a fairly extensive piece of work, I would have thought.
Look, I think we'll bring back, after the initial assessment with Tim and Gary's team, at our quarterly reviews, a budget submission if needed. Again, this is some of the stuff is bread and butter for the guys that it's in our interest to do, and I think it's within our discretion at this stage, and any major work that needs to be done, should it not be able to be done in normal budgets, we'll bring back. So I'm comfortable at this stage until we sort of get a handle around this. Again, I'm fairly confident that Tim and the team down there, I'm getting it right. There's a couple probably other people involved as well, have some of this stuff already in play, and it will be a case of documenting. So I don't think it's a big piece of work initially. We'll then get to further. Gary?
I think just through you, Madam Mayor, just for your concern there, Councillor, the fourth bullet point actually talks about bringing back a report if we need a further approval for funding.
Councillor Ogilvy, speaker against? Or
thank you, Madam Chair. Pretty annoyed about this, to be honest with you. It would be hilarious if it wasn't so sad. The reality is that the dire need for sports fields in the Redlands has been known for a long, long time, and Council has done work in this area not so very long ago, well, perhaps long ago in some people's view, going back to 2004 when we identified a need to be doing this stuff in the Open Space Plan, which was of course updated in 2009. We had a 2004 Sports and Recreation Facilities and Services Study, which pointed out the need to be providing sports fields, and we've had other work, school sports fields reviews done, we've had existing major sports fields and venues reviews done, we've had facility location analysis, facility needs analysis, is all done back in 2007-2008. The reality was that the council between 2008 to 2012 did all that work, identified an area where sports fields could and should go in the city, and this council took that stuff out of the budget and walked away from it. We are now here 3 or 4 years later. The problem has only gotten worse. I am the patron of two clubs in this city, on the mainland. One of them is touch footy, and one of them is soccer. And I can tell you that soccer is running out of space, and they are turning kids away. I can tell you that touch footy has been growing and growing forever and a day,
and they not only have a shortage of facilities, but they have to share those facilities with event space because they are now in competition with the former event space. This has been a problem that we have seen coming for a long, long time. The former council put allocated around $50 million for the need to try and address this need. That was all taken out of the budget. That looks good in a financial sense, helps us make look good as a council because we're not doing anything in this space, makes the balance sheet look good, but it does nothing for the livability of the area. What the community knows is there is about 50,000 people more coming to this area over the next, whatever it is, 20 years, and they have no sporting fields, and we have no plan. No plan at this current stage to do anything about it. All we've got now is a memo, a mayoral minute, to do something that was already done back in 2007 and 8, came up with a result that we walked away from. Honestly, we really need to wonder about what we're doing in this space. I can tell you that back in 2007 and 2008, we had a deficit of around 10 touch fields, 10 soccer fields and 6 rugby league fields. Where are they going to go, councillors? Where are they going to go, ask yourself. In this minute, we're talking about Birkdale, which has also been talked about as a university site, I might add. I've also heard it talked about as an event space. We're talking about Birkdale. Where else are we going to go with these sporting fields? All these people coming, this complete and utter deficit of sporting fields in the city, no plan to do it, and all we've got now, in the lead-up to an election, having walked away from the previous commitments that the council had, is another investigation. Honestly, I'll be voting for it because it's the only thing that we've got in this space, but honestly, we have let kids down in this city, sports people down in this city. And as regards to the investigation of the event space, what kind of events are we looking for? What kind of event space are we catering to? We don't have an event strategy that tells us what kind of space is needed. Honestly.
Speaker 4, Councillor Tolte.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Well, what I would like to say is, yes, we do need more sporting fields and more event spaces in the city, and I've been fairly vocal since I came in 2012 of my opinion of changing the local showground into sporting fields as an answer. Councillor Ogilvie has just told us that he's had these reports between 2004 and 2007, which are now obsolete because they're almost 10 years old. But all I can say is, well, thank God we're finally here and we're going to do something about it. No,
councillors, I'm going to get you to speak through the chair. Just respect the standing orders, thank you.
I walked away from a ridiculous decision that would have cost this council in excess of $80 million and councillors, legal
councillors, I will adjourn the meeting if you won't pay the respect to the chambers that's required through the standing orders. Thank you. Through the chair.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I've been working with Councillor Edwards for some time on a motion that we intend to bring in relation to sporting fields in the southern end of the city, which is an absolute deficit. 88% of the sporting fields that are currently in the city are in the north of the city, and we'll be bringing that very shortly. But in relation to the event space and the initial work to update those reports to get this moving, I'm more than happy to support this mayoral minute.
Thank you. Speaker against? Comment, Councillor Elliott?
Thank you, Mayor. Yeah, look, there's for and against, and a lot of people haven't done stuff, and people don't go till now. I'm happy to support this. I question the time frame. The CEO's indicated, yes, we can, but, you know, there's bigger issues. You know, you go down to Don's Club, BG Wood, and see if you can play footy on it. That won't happen. There's a lot of share issues go on. AFL Queensland, the cricket, and the AFL goes forward all the time. So we had to move them out. So I just don't see this as, you know, pluck this report, put it all together. This is big picture stuff if you're going to do it right. I've also heard Joe Patini's interested in the Birkdale site. He's got deeper pockets on here. And I just think this has gone on for a long time. There were things, nothing else was put up as a proponent when it was built. But certainly we need to go ahead. But it's not just about, as Councillor Talley's indicated, in the southern part. This should be a holistic view. Not the southern sports field group or the southern roads group. It should be a holistic plan for the city, not just a paper over until we get through the next election. That's all.
Councillor Beard. I'm taking comments,
just as a comment to try and bring some balance to this debate. Yes, I acknowledge there is a continuing need for expansion of sporting fields in Redland City. But by gee, I object to the suggestion that this council has let kids down in terms of sporting fields.
Councillor Ogilvy, if you don't have the floor, and I'll ask you to respect the standing orders.
Madam Mayor, I would challenge any councillor in this chamber to identify any local government authority in Australia who has provided better quality sporting fields than we have for our kids. Given the size of this LGA and the budget that we have, I think our kids are extremely well served. Have a look around at the sporting fields that we have in this city. Yes, they need to be. We need more, of course. But let's not denigrate the sporting fields that we have and perpetuate this ridiculous suggestion that we've let kids down. Our kids are well served.
Councillor Edwards.
Thank you. In life, timing is everything, and at the moment this timing is correct for that. The reason I say that is that we talk about the proposed sports fields in several years ago, which was going to cost around $80 million. That would equate between a 60 and 100% rate rise for our community. We've had to take the hard measures to get our finances in order, and we've done that, and now we've got our finances in order. Now is the time to proceed and do something correctly. You proceed at the wrong times, at the failure of this council to have gone when we can't afford to do things, to go on projects that we can't afford to. Now we can. So I'm going to support this. I think Councillor Beard's also correct about the quality of our sports fields. I only have to refer to the sports fields recently delivered to the Bay Islands, a standard of excellence. So I think we do a lot for the size of this council, and I think now the timing for this is the right time.
Councillor Bishop, comment?
Yeah, thank you. I can't let the opportunity go by to acknowledge that the timing is everything. Comment from Councillor Edwards basically says the time to keep rates down was before, and now we're going into elections, so it's time to make promises. It just sounds what it sounds
Councillor,
like.
Councillor Bishop, if you're not going to speak to the motion, I will...
No, I was just making an observation about the previous comment.
If you don't speak to the motion, I will cease your discussion in this forum.
So that was dealing with the previous comment. With regards to this particular motion, I spoke with you yesterday and just wanted to ask, it seems to be doing several things, event space, sporting grounds, and we'll get to the Birkdale lands thing in a moment, but in the body of this, it seems to suggest that there is a single solution. Can I just ask a clarification?
Councillor, if you read the motion, I did change it...
I have a printout of the previous.
I took on board your comments yesterday and I amended the Merrill Minute, which was distributed.
Great, thank you. I just didn't print out that copy of it, so forgive me for that. Great, so that's just referring to the fact that there are many types of events, and it goes back to some of the other comments that people have had about a holistic strategy, and indeed across the whole of the city, and indeed not just thinking about timing being when we choose it, but it's a perennial issue that we need to address, and certainly as part of city plan one would think that that's all been addressed and considered and accounted for, and hopefully that will be as it comes back to us. The question I have just regarding the Birkdale lands is, is that in this updated version? Okay, cool. I just want to acknowledge...
It's in the body, it's not in the...
It's in the body, that's right. So I just want to acknowledge that there is a great deal of discussion happening in that space at the moment with an officer in council working on a specific project. There are many considerations to take into account, not the least of which being heritage, and I notice a community member put forward a heritage assessment criteria request on that broader land to... Minister Lamming, and just suggesting that... Forgive me. Yeah. No.
No, it was to the Commonwealth Government.
It was to the Commonwealth Government through Andrew Lamming, forgive me. The just requesting a heritage assessment be done on that site. There are many things in the scoping background that need to be done, and I'm not quite sure whether you're suggesting in this that that should be earmarked for either sporting or events. I'm just wondering about the merits of having it in there. Certainly Council's already expressed a desire to acquire that site. I'm just wondering if...
Look, it's just one of those considerations that it'll be sort of weighed up with everything else that's put forward in that, but it's not indicating that that's the only space, is what I'm saying.
Great.
And obviously you'll have to go through that process that we've discussed.
Yeah, I'm just acknowledging that there is a process that community will be involved with at a certain stage. Thanks.
Councillor Harden and then Councillor Boglari.
Recently the Redlands Hockey Association had their finals using the fields on Fitzroy Street in my division, and in dealing with them they had about 30 groups all around Queensland come down to the fields and hold their finals there, and dealing with them, they praised our sporting fields down there and the help that council gave them that was there for them every step of the way, and appreciated and just thought the grounds were amazing to hold these finals over. It was a 3 or 4 day period. So we have provided grounds with the limited funds and of our size of our community that we have. But I do acknowledge and am happy to support this Merrill Minute on acknowledging that we need to make this a broader project for our whole community.
Councillor Boglari.
Oh, thank you. I'm going to support this because I supported the work that we did in previous years, and I was disappointed when that work didn't go ahead because this lack of sporting facilities has been noted in many reports since I got in here in 2008. I do want it to be a whole of city approach, though, because while we have major developments happening in the southern part of the city, and we have to now cater, and it is another cost to council of the new developments, with the new families coming in, we have to supply sporting fields to their children too. In the northern part of the city, we are having a lot of infill, and a lot of new families are moving in there as well, and sometimes that seems to be neglected. So I am going for the whole city approach, which has been mentioned. And I just have to pick up Councillor Edwards on a comment saying, now we've got our finances in order. I'm tired of these insinuations. In 2012, this council got a glowing report.
Okay, Councillor.
No, he said the comment.
No,
so I think I've got
Councillor,
the right.
We're talking about he was talking about the fact that we have a surplus budget now, and that's the end of it. I mean, really we're talking about the opportunity to get information brought back.
I can get yet another...
Well, I don't think it was intended. It wasn't intended to upset you. It was just saying that we're in a surplus position. Okay, thank you.
Well, he did. He did say finances were out of order, and yet in 2012 we got a glowing report from QTC saying we're one of the best in Queensland. So, I do take offence to those comments. I am supporting this because there is that need, like I said, that has been identified. And I like the second line where it says support existing events, because it is our local people who are actually making all the place destinations, like Wellington Point, may I say. The guys there are bringing so many people in here. There's a regular couple now that come down from Caboolture, you know, for dancing in the streets. So we can't forget our little smaller local events that are happening as well as the larger ones.
Thank you, Councillor Boglari. Are there any other comments, councillors? If not, I might just to sum up, if I could. Firstly, in response to some of the comments made in regards to council removing an $80 million capital impost on a plan, which I'm sure some of you thought was a good plan, I think you'll find that the cost just of the land was not the significant issue to overcome. It was how we're going to have a regional sporting facility with number of codes going to the same place on a weekend and the access, etc. There were a lot of hairs on that plan, in my view. And I still think that it's incumbent on us as government to look at doing things differently, which is why I embraced the state government's pilot project at Victoria Point. I think there's heaps of opportunities, and Sharks at Victoria Point are making most of those opportunities, I believe, at Victoria Point, as are the Alexandra Hills Cricket Club, I think, at Capalaba State College, if I'm correct. But look, I'm coming back to the reason this motion is here. I'm all for doing it differently and looking at other opportunities. I'm a huge supporter of the arts in this city. That's
There's no, you know, secret about that. And you've, many of the officers here are tired of me saying, you know, that sports actually gets a way bigger Guernsey in this city than our arts and our culture does. And I talk about the fact that we maintain all of those fields to an exceptional level, more so than any other city. And you only have to drive next door to Logan to just look at the state of their turf compared to ours. For me, it's not just about providing great sporting activities for our young people, but the cultural heart of this city is just as important to our young people, and celebrating who we are as a city through events is one way we embrace our younger generations. And the challenge has always been that often the same space where sport is played is where events occur. And no one wants to take from Peter to pay Paul. So what we need to do is look at this holistically, not just from a sporting perspective, but what are the sort of events that our city can attract that will bring people to our city, keep our young people here, give them jobs, give them opportunities, whilst at the same time giving our children opportunities to stay fit and healthy and participate in team activities. That's what it's about. And if I could just also talk about the economic value of that to our city, sport's great. When it comes to events, the figures I have here is that, with some of the events that we've got coming up in the next 6 months, we have had the Bikes and the Bulls. We had the Under 13 Girls State Hockey Championships, which Councillor Hardman referred to. We've got Four Islands Festival happening over on the island shortly, Wellington Point Retro Markets, Tough Mudder, God help us, Sirimay, Caravan Camping Boating Four Wheel Drive Expo, a Relish Good Food Festival, which will be held at Raby Bay, the Redlands Multicultural Festival in October. We've also got a couple of festivals down in Wellington Point with the retro markets. Our City Slider, Redlands Rockabilly Revival, Australia Junior Surfing Titles. We won't need a sporting ground for that one, thank goodness. And also next year looking at a huge cycling event. Those events will bring over 50,000 people to our city with an economic value. If you look at the spend per visitor, the Blues Fest, my apologies. Sorry. I'll walk for diabetes, you name it. Okay, all right. I've created a monster. But that, to our community, means $6.6 million worth of money invested into our community, and we can't just let that go by the wayside. At the same time, we can't let our sporting activities and our young people having access to sporting fields go by the wayside. My view is that one central space is never going to work, that we need to look across the city, and that's what I'm hoping the audit will bring back, and maximise the opportunities that are already there. So let's not just reinvent the wheel, look at what we can do better. And no doubt by the discussion around the room, everyone's got the same idea. We all acknowledge that there's more work to be done. Our work will never be done in this space, as far as I'm concerned. We'll always be trying to do it better and find other opportunities, whether it be with events or new sporting organisations in our city. And that's why Redlands is quite special, because we have that great sense of community where we get volunteers supporting all of the arts, all of the cultures and all of our sporting endeavours. So... with that, I look forward to getting the report back. Obviously, there'll be further debate, and I look forward to that as well, and I'll put the motion, councillors, those in favour. Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. Thank you, councillors. Moving on to the next item. We have no notice of motion to repeal or amend. We do have a notice of motion from Councillor Gleeson, so if you'd like to move the item as listed on the agenda, councillor.
Thanks, Madam Mayor. Yes, please, I'd like to move the item as is on the screen.
Move Councillor Gleeson, seconded Councillor Beard. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Gleeson?
Thanks, Madam Mayor. I think it's fairly self-explanatory, but I'll go back to the start if I can, just for those that haven't been following. A few years ago, the state government introduced a Get in the Games program.
Oh, it's my fault. Sorry.
So the state government brought in the Get in the Game grant. It was to subsidise to the tune of $150 the cost of sport for kids in across the state from low-income families. That was something, as you know, I'm fairly passionate about junior sports, and I thought it was a terrific program. I went around in Division 9. I've got 5 sporting clubs, and just investigated the cost of sports when you talk at take up into consideration your membership fees, your weekly game fees, your cost of uniforms, jerseys, shoes, boots, etc. The $150 I thought was terrific, but there was a big difference between $150 and $250. $250 meant that kids could participate in sport with no out-of-pocket expenses for their parents in the swimming club, the Capella Piranha Swimming Club. They could swim for the whole season. No out-of-pocket expenses at the PCYC to play basketball. No out-of-pocket expenses to play lawn bowls at the Capella Bar Sports Club. It meant the difference that you could put your child in a sport at the Capella Bar Rugby League Club and only be out-of-pocket for $50 to play a full season of rugby league. So it just made the difference of it helping and really helping. What happened from that, I started a pilot project in Division 9. Sorry, it wasn't just in Division 9. It also branched out into Alex Hills and Birkdale South, pretty much. Four schools had mufti days to raise gold coin donations to put a fund together, and then from there businesses supported the program and a local sports club as well. Together we raised about $4,000, which assisted at $100 a piece, assisted about 40 kids to get into sport and utilise both the state government's Get in the Game grant and our pilot project in Capella Bar. I've got many stories of how the kids benefited from it, but I mean, I guess probably the best story is that Capella Bar Piranha Swimming Club signed up 15 new kids to the program last swimming season, and of those 15, 12 had never swum before. So it was a fantastic result. I saw the benefit. I saw the kids at the schools embrace it and try and help raise money for their schoolmates and their local clubs. I saw the clubs embrace it. I saw the benefits to the kids that were participating in the sport. And we've been doing it for 12 months now, and I'm bringing this motion in. It's not a request to just go hell-bent into it. It's to investigate the council looks into the benefits of establishing this program citywide. I'm realistic in that we've asked for that funding to be capped at $50,000. I'm certain that the school citywide will continue to assist with the raising of funds if we need to go down that path. And as the councillor for Sport and Rec, I guess, or the council spokesperson, or the person who kicked this program off, I'm happy to drive that citywide and contact all the schools throughout the city to make that happen. Initially it's just to investigate the potential, but there are a couple of conditions in item one. It's that the $100 subsidy is to participate in sporting clubs within the city council boundary. In item number two, it stipulates that the council subsidy is limited to children who live within the Redland City Council government boundary as well, and that the parents must have a Centrelink health care card or pensioner concession card. So these are genuine low-income families. It's not designed to assist anyone other than our lower-income families across the city. So I ask the councillors to support the investigation. I'm happy to take you to my clubs and talk about the benefits that they've seen over the coming weeks while the investigation is being done. It's been a terrific program for my mind. It's been a great success.
Speaker against? Comments? Against Councillor Ogilvie? Oh, okay. Well, I've got three people wanting to comment at this point. Councillor Beard, Councillor Elliott and Councillor Ogilvie.
Thanks, Madam Mayor. First of all, I want to congratulate Councillor Gleeson on this motion. I think it's a very good one. And you won't be able to measure, the return on investment. But my gut feeling is that the return on investment, should it go ahead, would be very, very strong. And I think if we can put another 20 or 30 or 40 kids, albeit even more than that, with $50,000, we can put more kids into team sport in Redlands. That's 40 or 50 kids that are not on the street, not spraying graffiti on your fence. Not that all of them do, of course, but it's going to go a long way towards protecting them and the broader community, and I think it's a great program, and I wholeheartedly support it. And as Councillor Edwards said before, timing is everything. And at this particular point of time in our financial evolution of this council, we are in a position to consider this, and I wholeheartedly recommend it.
And Councillor Beard, Councillor Elliott.
Yeah, I think Councillor Edwards said you're putting your feet on the sticky paper. You'll support this, you all support babies, but certainly I question we've got $50,000. Councillor Gleeson's indicated 40 kids. I'm not sure if that was the extent or that was the amount they could provide for.
I think there's an investigation to take place, and that should be ironed out.
I'm just worried that we have elderly people, and we're creating another subset. I can see another councillor bringing along another, you know, I just want a briefing report on what we're doing for the elderly, and we've done consistently kept it at $330 for this term of council and before, of cost. And most clubs, and I know the AFL club at Alexandra Hills, these things are done inside the club. You know, things are waived and stuff like that. And I was sort of wondering where Councillor Lees was going when swimming. I was wondering what the price of Speedos were these days in swimming. But certainly, we want to be very careful. Like, we've been, you know, ruthless with our budgets and things like that, that we don't take the foot off the brake. And I'm happy to look at this, but be wary. I think there'll be other things coming along. As soon as you approve this, there's a myriad of people out there that need a hand, and I think this council's tried to shift our funding and grants to think more to the state, and I think this is not our business, but I'm happy to look at the report.
Councillor Ogilvie.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm more than happy to support kids being able to do productive things other than graffiti fences, which is why I support council providing proper sporting fields so that all kids, advantaged and disadvantaged, can play sport, team sports and so forth. First question, I suppose, is it our responsibility? Not sure that it is. Is it back to basics? I'm not really sure that it is. And I think you've made a very good point, Councillor, earlier, and that is that I don't think it's fair and across the board and comprehensive enough, which is why I would like to move an amendment, Madam Chair. And it's a dot point four, and it would read that Council investigate other opportunities to assist other low-income and disadvantaged people access sport and cultural pursuits.
Sounds like a big body of work. So there's amendment. So, councillors, Councillor Ogilvie has moved an amendment. Is there support? I'll seek some advice. Is it contrary to the motion, Nick?
I'd have to have a look through that with you. Ultimately, it's your decision as to whether it is, Madam Mayor, but if it is contrary to the motion, then it cannot be allowed as an amendment.
Madam Chair, doesn't negate the intent of the motion, which is the idea of being contrary. It only complements and enhances the intent of the motion.
Councillors, we have an amendment put forward, so I haven't seen.
Sorry, the council investigate other opportunities to assist other lower income and disadvantaged people access sporting and cultural pursuits.
I'm happy to. Is there a seconder for that motion? Okay, Councillor Bishop. That amendment, I'm saying. Would you like to speak to the amendment, Councillor Ogilvie?
Madam Chair, which is to say that if we're going to put our foot on the sticky paper, we should put our foot on the sticky paper properly and do a proper across the board consideration of all disadvantaged groups and all possible pursuits that that may bring benefits to their lives and our community. You know, I'm thinking of things like the age people who have suffered from social isolation. We know that if we can get them out of their houses, doing things in community, then that's going to provide great benefits to their lives. Now, if we're going to do something like this, which I think is absolutely a good thing, then we should be looking across the board at other opportunities to assist our community.
Speaker against the amendment. Councillor Gleeson.
Yeah, thanks, Madam Mayor. I believe it's contrary to the motion as well. This is not about every social service throughout the city. This is about children in sport. This is not about aid services. It's not about other things. There's certainly a large range of funding available for the arts and other programs. This is about junior sport development, and this is an extension of a program that I piloted in Capalaba. This is not, I think this. The amendment just takes it too far. And kind of skewers the whole point of order, intent Madam. of the motion.
Point of order, Madam Mayor. Could I just draw your attention to the line in item 2, which says children between the ages of 8 and 12, which is absolutely specific, and item 4 is contrary to that motion.
Madam Chair, it enhances the whole overall outcome of the motion. It doesn't. Dot point 4 is a bigger set of, if you like, of investigations, and it includes all the investigations specified in dot point 1, 2, and 3. But what dot point 4 says is that we increase the size of the set, if you like, to use a mathematical term, of investigations. Dot point 2, the investigation stipulated dot point 2, is included in the set at dot point 4. It's therefore not contrary to the motion.
I'm getting some advice and I'm hearing that it probably is contradictory to the motion, so I'll get Nick, to our governance expert, to tell us otherwise.
Madam Mayor, section 10 of the standing orders is in two parts. So it says an amendment to a motion must A, be in terms which retain the general intent of the original motion, and B, not negate the motion. So my advice is that Council should be considering part A. Is the amendment in terms which retain the general intent of the original motion?
Thank you. Okay, so that amendment is not allowed. So thank you.
Point of order, Madam Chair.
Well, I think I've made that.
Dot point 4 says other opportunities. It adds to dot point 2.
Thanks.
It doesn't say dot point 2 is now negated.
Thanks.
It just increases the size of the investigation.
No, point A, if you read the standing orders, says be in terms which retain the general intent of the original motion, and that's what Nick was referring to. I've ruled on that. I'm happy to take a comment, Councillor Elliott, because you did have your hand up.
Yeah, Mayor, all I'm saying is it'll be in the next fortnight's thing. There'll be a notice of motion for this. All I'm saying, Councillor and Police, and yesterday we talked about the ages, and I commented on that he was talking about withdrawing, that he obviously hadn't. But if you don't deal with it now, you're going to deal with it in a fortnight. So which way you want to, and public opinion will be out there then. So all I'm just saying, you need to deal with it, whether Council of Police wants to change. If you don't, ram it down our throats, but I guarantee it'll be here in a fortnight.
I'm going to take some more comments. Councillor Edwards?
Look, I must admit, I share some of the concerns raised, but what I would prefer, I think point 4 goes beyond the original intent of this motion, but as Councillor Gleeson said, they've had success with the schools raising funds for this. So I would support this motion, but I'd actually like to see that part of the process of what Council does is to engage with the schools to raise their own funding to take over the program down the track, not for us to be on the sticky paper forever and a day. So I'd be happy for an amendment that specifically goes to the fundraising activities of those schools and those organisations involved for them to take over the process.
I'm going to allow the comments, and then I've actually ruled that the amendment isn't in line with our standing orders, and it is up to there are opportunities if councils want to bring this forward in another form. Councillor Boglari?
Yes, so at the pre-general meeting we actually spoke about this, and we're having a workshop on grants coming up, which I think would have been the due process here rather than bringing it ad hoc. The Mayor has, under your category, you have grants already to assist youth in sport. This could have been, you know, in our workshop discussed how we could have increased that amount if need be. And yesterday it was said, if you do this, we are going to get every other group coming. So I'd rather just let it lie on the table until we have that workshop where officers bring us all the facts and budgetary requirements that we need.
Councillor Tolte.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I have a procedural question, if I can. It seems to me that the motion should be those points that are held in dot point 1, and then the points that are in dot points 2 and 3 should be the parameters of that investigation rather than being a dot point of the motion. What we're asking officers to do is to investigate the potential of having this new program and how it might work, and those parameters that are in 2 and 3 are suggested as a guideline for the officers to begin to work with based upon the pilot project.
So I'm just wondering, with some advice from officers, whether numbers 2 and 3 should be changed into, or maybe the introduction there, rather than that the council subsidy is limited to, should perhaps be reworded to say that the council investigation is limited to or looks at. Can I get some advice on that, please?
It would require an amendment, I believe.
Councillors, again, I know I think Councillor Gleeson, I didn't give you any advice, but I think through you, sorry, Madam Mayor, I don't think I actually gave you any advice. Not sure what advice you sought from other officers, but again, I would just like to point out from a technical point of view, this is where I strongly encourage councillors, should you wish to push motions and those sort of things forward, that you seek advice beforehand, get them duly constructed. We tend to be on these notices of motions running amendments, and so it is quite difficult. So as I found out in it is not my part to say yes or no on the technical merits of the motion. We can just merely advise. So the motion is as it is put, and I think, Julie, our Councillor Tolte, unless you propose an amendment, which is what you are doing, the motion needs to stay as it is. And then we will have to work through as officers how we can best fulfil that resolution of council.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I'm more than happy to support the intent of this motion. I'm just not sure that the way it is currently worded actually directs the officers to what's being asked of them. Councillor Gleeson, would you be happy to amend your motion so that dot point two says something along the lines of that council consider in their investigations the following points or something
before
like that?
Before we head down that road, can I just suggest a way forward, maybe, and probably touches on what Councillor Boglari suggested, that perhaps we refer this to the community grants workshop within this motion for it to be discussed further at that, because I think the discussion was that there are opportunities for us to do just that, and we are doing that in other ways currently, so that the motion can stand, but with it to be discussed at our next community grants, and then rather than trying to wordsmith it all here, that gives us an opportunity. Once again, we have discussed this informally, but once again to discuss that, if you're happy to do that, Councillor Gleeson, that's not too far away. My understanding, it's only a month away. So I'll refer to the officer if that is a scope for our workshop on the community grants. We understand the intent. We want to make sure it's discussed at that point, and that will be reflected in any decision that we have to make on community grants going forward. It would just require an amendment that we discuss it.
Look, I think it's Greg, totally within his nodding down there. It's Madam Mayor and councillors, it is well within the scope of the grants. Should you choose to do that, and I think that's probably the appropriate place from my perspective.
I guess I'm seeking confirmation from the local council if he's happy to take it to that workshop that will come back with the information required to make that decision.
So just so that I'm clear on this, we'd raise an item dot point four, and that'd go in under there.
I would say that to investigate at our next community grants workshop the potential to provide financial assistance to children who want to participate. You happy with that? I think that's probably the way to go. So, is that okay, Councillor Gleeson? And the seconder, who do we have? Okay, you happy with that, councillors? With that in mind, we probably don't need a great deal of discussion right now. I'm happy to hand back to the councillor. Is there a question, or are you happy to sum up? Okay. Point. Yes. Yes. I'm turning to that. I'm just getting some questions here from Councillor Gleeson. Okay. So we just need to put the amendment up there.
Right.
Councillors, it's moved. The amendment's moved by Councillor Gleeson and Councillor Beard. They've accepted that. Can I just have a vote on the amendment? Thank you. Those in favour. That's carried unanimously. Thank you, councillors. So with that, I now put the motion. Oh, okay, pardon me. All right.
Thanks, but just going back, it's going to come up next time round. So
why don't delete 2 and 3? It's going to a workshop, put drop Craig's in, and we do it all together. We don't have to have this embarrassing situation in 2 weeks' time.
I'm assuming that we'll... So you're proposing another amendment.
I'll move an amendment to the motion, Madam Chair.
Drop 2 and 3 and put the other amendment. It's going to come up. All I'm just saying, we waste a lot of time wordsmithing here. We're going to do it in 2 weeks.
I'd like to move an amendment to the motion, Madam Chair.
Just getting a response from Nick, because that probably sounds like it's going to be a slightly bigger body of work.
I have another suggestion, Madam Mayor, because technically you can't amend an amended motion, is to whether it is better just to vote for this matter to lie on the table and then bring it back in whatever form the Councillor wishes to bring it back after the workshop.
I actually just had a vote on the amendment and it was supported. So I think we should just put that motion at this point
Chair,
in time.
Just point of order, I believe you can amend an amended motion. It becomes the motion and then you can amend the motion.
That wasn't the advice just given by Nick. Having said that, there's no reason why you can't raise it, your other issues at that workshop as well, and have that reported back.
Madam Mayor, I can respond, and I remember discussing this with the councillors at the time. Where an amendment to a motion is before a meeting, no other amendment to the motion can be considered until after the first amendment has been put. The amended motion with the proposer's approval may have some minor changes to words to ensure that its intent is better understood without changing the meaning of the amended motion. And if you recall during the workshops, and I think we probably discussed this at the council meeting when you approved the standing orders, that was agreed to enable you to do some minor wordsmithing where there was an unintended consequence or perhaps lack of clarity in an amendment to a motion, but to avoid the situation where motions were continually being amended on the run, because really those amendments should be done and discussed before you come into this room.
I'm off. I'm on. Point of order, Madam Chair. I think the intent of the standing orders is that you can't amend a motion and then try and amend an amendment, because otherwise it gets way too messy. But once the amended motion then becomes the motion, then it's back in play for amendments to it if council so wishes, which is what the councillor is suggesting and I'm proposing to do.
Madam Mayor, no, that's not the intent of the standing orders. It becomes the amended motion. But you're right in some ways, councillor. It is therefore the motion and the only motion put before you, but it still remains an amended motion. If that amended motion does not get up, then you can then go back and have a play. So my suggestion is, if you don't like the words as amended, vote it down and then go and have another go at it.
So, councillors, without trying to get into the technical meeting procedures here, I think there's opportunities for us to raise all of these at that workshop, and if I could, I think it's time to sum up and put this motion. The motion that has been voted on, the amendment was voted on, and it was, so it has become the motion. It's under Councillor Boglari's suggestion to have this discussion at our next community grants workshop, and you can raise anything at that workshop, by the way.
Thanks, Madam Mayor. Just to clarify a couple of points that have been discussed. I actually did meet with council officers about this notice of motion. I was assisted by council officers with the notice of motion. And the notice of motion was signed off and authorised that went through a week and a half ago. So I did do that background work. It was suggested next time I'd do a bit more. Councillor Elliott questioned the $4,000 and 40 kids and how that works. What happened, it's basically $100 per child assistance. We raised about $4,000, so we were able to assist 40 children. The idea of the $50,000 limit is that hopefully we'll be able to fund some of that anyway, but it's just an average across the city. $50,000, I think, would be enough to satisfy the purpose of, or the intent of, the motion. Look, this is all about our kids and sport. This, the benefits that sports offer and provide to our kids, such as coordination, confidence, social skills, the fact that it gives them a sense of belonging to a group outside of their home environment sometimes. And, you know, I love the old saying, get them into sport and keep them out of court. So, Madam Mayor, with that, I'd like to sum up and put it to yourself and the councillors. Many thanks.
Thank you. I'll put the motion, councillors. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried unanimously. Thank you, councillors. Councillor Gleeson, on to your next motion. It's a bit like that. Councillor Gleeson.
Thanks, Madam Mayor. I'd like to move the motion that's on the screen in front of us, which is the council resolves to request that the Chief Executive Officer provide a report to council by the end of November 2015 identifying and outlining the viability of options for council's involvement, either solely or jointly with other partners, in creating and managing solar farms. The consideration of the viability of any option should include the potential for a financial return to the community.
Move, Councillor Gleeson, seconded Councillor Tolte. We'll speak to it, Councillor Gleeson.
Thanks, Madam Mayor. Look, there's obvious benefits to investigating this. I don't know whether it's still a viable proposition to build solar farms or not. I believe some communities out there are seeing some good results. But obviously we've got benefits such as clean green energy, which is great for the environment and will hopefully take some pressure off global warming.
All right, councillors.
But at front of mind, and the last sentence says most of it, the consideration of the viability of any option should include the potential for a financial return to the community. I'm not asking to go out and spend $20 million that's going to cost the community to maintain a facility. This is, I'm thinking about a commercial venture, a utility that the ratepayers can potentially own and provide a return to ratepayers, which will down the track assist with pressure on rate increases. Essentially, Madam Mayor, I think it's time. 5 years ago, this wouldn't have been viable. It just purely would have been too costly to do. And I know it's Paul's, Councillor Bishop's jumping out of his skin because he never thought of this. But I think the time's come. I believe personally that there is some commercial opportunities for the city. I have no idea in what manner, whether there'd be a number of small plants around the city or a large one. But the motion has been left intentionally fairly open for officers to work with.
People can't wait to speak to this motion, I can tell. We've got Councillor Bishop, Councillor Tolte, then Councillor Ogilvie. Are we speaking against? Okay, so that's a speaker for. So if you've got a speaker against, I'll go Councillor Ogilvie.
Three-word slogan for you, and it's harebrained schemes. This is a beauty. What a boondoggle. I don't know what the motivations for this are. I don't know what the motivations for this are. There could only be two, I can imagine. One would be that council might make some money, and the other might be that council might address climate change. With regards to the latter, climate change, I would think that a better report to ask for would be the ways that council could combat climate change most effectively. It might be as simple as changing the lights in here. It might be as simple as changing our fleet across to, I don't know, a different kind of fuel. I don't know what it is, but we would be better off working out what the lower-hanging fruit are in regards to combating climate change if combating climate change was what this was all about. Now, if it's all about making money, then I would suggest to you that, personally, as a ratepayer and as a councillor, I would say that I don't want to see councils getting involved in business opportunities. It's not what councils, governments should be doing. Councils should be, of course, looking for alternate ways to raise money other than rates, but businesses are for businesses and governments are for raising money, are for deploying services. Really, ratepayers, I think, have a fairly reasonable expectation that they are the best placed
to make their own investment decisions with their money. And if they think solar farms are a great idea, then they can go and find a company on the stock market and buy, you know, some shares in that particular company. So I don't think, ratepayers are going to be open to the idea of just willy-nilly going off with some harebrained scheme and investing in solar farms. I'm sure if we were to look at the climate change issue separately, we might come up with different suggestions. The only thing I would say, once again, is this is kind of overly specific. If you do want to go down this, if you do have this sort of view, well, we're killing two birds with one stone. I've heard this one before. Councillor Beard was around for the whole waste thing when, we were going to solve our waste problems and make money with some commercial venture that subsequently flopped and cost ratepayers and everybody else a whole bunch of money. If you are determined to go down this, kill two birds with one stone kind of thing, then I would suggest that you at least include wind farms in the motion, because it's the same thing. It's alternative energy. It's potentially a climate change thing, and it's potentially a money maker. I don't think that the motion is well formed at all in the first instance. But if you're going to do that, at least do include wind farms.
CEO would like to make a comment.
Councillors, just to make sure that you're aware, we have got an extensive program and have over a number of years been reducing our greenhouse gas emissions, which is part of the subject of the annual report, and it's probably a great time to congratulate the team on doing a fantastic job. And you would have noticed just recently changing over to LED lighting, which has got a significant reduction in power consumption in throughout council buildings. There's also a current tender out for Judy Holt in reducing LED costs. Our fleet has been constantly optimised. There were some targets originally around there. So again, the team are doing a lot of work on that. Also on the solar farms, well aware of this one. Sunshine Coast is well and truly down the track of partnering with a commercial, and we are monitoring that through a forum I sit on the SEQ CEO's forum, which I chair at the moment, looking at that, and they have some very promising outcomes and returns, and the risk is very low. The other one, just for wind farms, again, my background. Sadly, Redlands doesn't get enough wind. The only areas currently slated are down southern states, or on southern states, and also in some of the corridors up through northern Queensland. So, hence, wind farms would be fanciful in, I agree with you, in Redlands. They're just some facts from my history, sorry.
Okay, so Speaker 4, Councillor Tolte. Oh, sorry, Councillor Bishop. Oh, sorry. Councillor Bishop speaking 4. Thank you, Councillor.
Yeah, thank you. Those feathers around the rear of the ostrich must have got warm with the global warming, because his head's come up out of the ground, which is great to see solar farms on the discussion, and I'm pleased that whatever education Councillor Gleeson's had through the Environment and Sustainability group up in the city has worked in our favour.
Councillor Gleeson, that's Councillor Hewlett.
Oh, well, I don't know how he's learned it then. But it's good that it's here, and I'd like to acknowledge, if I may, as the CEO was saying, the incredible work that has been done by council officers for this organisation, and what has been done in the emissions of our carbon footprint since around about 2008, I think. One of the great things that happened is that they realised that there was so much money being saved. They had an officer, and I'm going to give you the name of this officer so we can keep it in mind. Officer Luke Reed did some great work looking at environment and sustainability with the Redland Sustainability Report, looking at energy efficiency not only for council but for community. So there's a body of work from 2009, 2010, partway through 2011, when the water, obviously there was cut from that time, that didn't get proceeded with. But one of the great interesting things, he's gone on and set up an organisation called Community Owned Renewable Energy. So one of the things that I think is a great opportunity with managing solar farms, Councillor Gleeson, is the opportunity for us to have some discussions about community-owned renewable energy. Some partnering not just with big corporates, but with members of our community, with organisations, with people like the Donald Simpson Centre, where there is a constant requirement for electricity bills, and that's one of the greatest concerns they have. I've got a document here from New South Wales. Obviously, Queensland coal is good for humanity, and our energy has relied very much on coal, but down in New South Wales, there has been some really good, robust reporting done. There's a great, another document. Who is the officer in charge of this particular section? What will it come under? Well, it'll have to be a male.
It'll be in Louise's portfolio of Gary Fitina, sort of thing.
It'll be in the environment and regulation, so Gary Fitina's will be the lead agent.
Okay, cool. Just good to know that this community power agency, this is about community-owned renewable energy, there's under box two, they call it, the four D's of community-owned renewable energy, which is decarbonising. So that's, you're asking questions, I don't know whether it would work, but certainly decarbonising is an important issue. Decentralising, so the centralisation of our energy is a concern. Third, democratising our energy governance through community ownership and participation. And fourth, demonstrating the effectiveness of renewable energy and community ownership models. We're seeing the rapid uptake of domestic solar across the Australia. It's been identified as the greatest opportunity. There's an organisation called by Elon Musk, who's now invented new batteries. This is going to change the ability for us to return our investment to our small community groups. And so there's robust research done within this organisation. I'd like us to encourage people to look at that as they do their research, but also look at how can we collaborate and partner with the community groups, not the least of which is individuals who may get together around a collective use of their superannuation down the track. Neighbourhoods getting together, looking at local energy banks that they're looking at now, whole communities doing stuff. I'm sure we'll probably be in conflict with the state around that, but with Energex, given that it's a government-owned entity, but there are huge opportunities. Thank you, Councillor Gleeson. I'm sorry I didn't get my hand up quick enough to second it, but totally with it, and happy to be part of any involvement, any discussions on this theme. Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor Bishop. Any other speakers against? Because I'll just take some comments. Obviously, I've got a couple of councillors that have been indicating they want to speak. Councillor Tolte and Councillor Edwards.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I just wanted to note that I seconded the motion because I do support the idea that we would look into and gather this information. We've had some very interesting reports from other councils on the work that's been done and the profitability of these sort of investments. And from memory, I think just our street lighting alone is up around the $1 million a year in our electricity bill.
$6 million.
Oh, sorry.
$6 million.
I must have been looking at a quarterly report or something. And if we can find a way to offset those costs and be better for the environment, then that's all good. And this is just looking at the data and asking for the information. So I'm very pleased to support it.
Yeah. Councillor Edwards.
Thank you. Must be blue moon tonight because it's good to see our two council polls on the same page. I've just got a question, and it's through the chair to the CEO. Is the end of November 2015 sufficient time to do this body of work?
Look, I think we can do the initial report. There's a power of work which our Group General Counsel and Head of Procurement, Andrew's in constant view with there. We have had some initial views going on in the background around sites that might be possible for solar, so I think we can do. It won't be, as Councillor Bishop held up, probably as comprehensive as some of those, but it will give us the indicative view of whether we should proceed with it, whether we have suitable land, whether there's grid connections, etc., and what our estimated return is. And I think Sunshine Coast will have some contracts signed and their business case approved into that lead-up in time. So I think this one's a doable, yes.
Councillor Boglari.
Sorry, just clarity on something the CEO then just said. You said we mightn't have suitable land. I thought we mentioned yesterday we were discussing it wouldn't necessarily have to be within the Redlands, that we were looking outside as well.
Yeah, no, I was just saying there is suitable. So we've looked at, if you look at the Cleveland waste and some of our waste treatment plants, we tend to have RUDs large expenses of land there. Now, whether that conflicts with the scheme or those sort of things, or we could look anywhere. But Sunshine Coast is predominantly, their business model is based on their land and them partnering and getting a return on that land. So it is that's the business case. But we'll look at all the options. And again, that's why we have set up our Redland Investment Corporation. So for things outside of the city, if you remember, that's one of the things that could be done with the other revenue streams.
Any other comments? Just quickly, obviously we'll get a lot of information back, and I guess if we never go, we'll never know that, you know, that there is an opportunity, and certainly the opportunity is to offset the expenses of running an organisation and a city is something we should always be looking for. And anecdotally, what I've been told by senior management at Sunshine Coast is that it's a $50 million project that will ultimately be paid off. The return, the payback period is less than 2 years, and thereafter it will actually fund all the consumption of their power as an organisation. So it's certainly incumbent on us to look at those opportunities, whether your motivation is the environment or the bottom line for your ratepayers and the increasing cost of living. It's certainly something we should be investigating, and we should be encouraging all of you and members of the community to come up with these sorts of ideas so that we can continue to do things differently and do them better. But I look forward to that report, and I think one of the good things is we're not the trailblazer in this space, because the Sunshine Coast has already done this, and through the Council of Mayors we certainly get updates. We can probably learn from some of the less fortunate, you know, elements that came out of that, and hopefully leverage off the good elements that came out of their work. So back to you, Councillor Gleeson, to sum up, and then we'll put the motion.
Thanks, Madam Mayor. I'm just clarify a couple of points, and it's a pity Councillor Ogilvie's not in the room. He called this motion, or the idea, or the concept, a harebrained scheme and a boondoggle. Councillor Beard has looked that up for me. A boondoggle is a project that is considered a waste of both time and money. Well, clearly, I don't think it is. I think it's a very worthwhile project. It's going to benefit environmentally, as you've just said, environmentally, financially. There's many, many reasons why we would spend time to investigate this matter. Councillor Bishop touched on community solar farms, which is what they're doing down in Lismore. I think it's probably a little bit different to what I've got in my mind, that we would do that to benefit ratepayers down the track, but certainly no reason why a group can't form in the city and have a similar project like Lismore running, but it's probably a little bit different to what I had in my mind. But as I say, the motion is fairly open. It's not designed to restrict the officers within their investigations, so I'm happy to put it to everybody and ask for their support.
Councillors, I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. Councillor Elliott and Councillor Ogilvie are absent. Councillors, that moves on to our next notice of motion from Councillor Edwards.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Before I'd just like to ask the indulgence that I discussed this notice of motion with Councillor Bolglari yesterday when we were talking around, and Councillor Bolglari pointed to the fact that she introduced a similar motion some time ago, and what I'd like to do is to remove the reference to Southern for this notice of motion. So I'd like to move the motion with the deletion of the word Southern.
I want to get the motion on the table, that's all. So.
Yep, just a bit of further update. I got information back from officers this morning, Councillor Edwards, just before we came in. They have proceeded with the work, and they're up to actually getting the briefing note just about written on the availability of 4 sites in Southern Redlands to actually talk to the state about it.
Can we just get the motion on the table before
we
get to...
Well, I'm thinking we don't need the motion.
Well, we have a motion. We have to deal with the motion. So Councillor Edwards has moved a motion with an amendment, and the amendment just removes the word Southern, correct?
Okay. That's right.
So moved by Councillor Edwards, seconded by Councillor Tolte. Councillor Edwards, you might just want to address Councillor Bolglari's, but you might want to talk to the motion at the same time.
Thank you. I am aware that body of work has been done.
My concern is that there has been work done in the past by officers which fails to see the light of day, and so I want to ensure that this body of work comes before us and we consider it. Our city has one of the highest boat ownerships anywhere around, and it's only due because we've got a wonderful bay here. And I can remember as a kid growing up in Wellington Point that it was never really busy. It was often used, but when you go back, you know, four decades or so, the number of boat ramps we had were all with picnic areas, and they were satisfactory for at the time. But the growth of the city has happened in the north, and we see comes peak times there. As we've seen in Wellington Point, there's been some aggressive attitudes between people wanting to be there at parking as picnickers and people want to use us as boaties. And when we're in a constrained area of land, there's not much we can do about it. And the same thing is like Wynnum Creek and Victoria Point. And so my original reference was to the southern Redland Bays. I knew there was work being done there. And because it hasn't been developed anywhere near the extent of the north, there are some inexpensive options for us to look at creating boat ramps that are just dedicated for the boaties, the areas, for them to put their boats into. Certainly we can look at the whole of Redlands, but the cost is going to be much, much more expensive in the north of Redlands. And as a boat owner myself, if I knew that if I have to drive an extra 15 minutes, but I knew I can get a park there, put my boat in, and get out, I'd be happy to do that extra drive. And I think a lot of boaties think that way. They get up early in the morning, they want to get out, and I'd like to see this body of work come back to us so that we as a council can reinforce that this is something we want to see on a 10-year capital works plan. I'm not saying it has to be done straight away. We need to identify it, and I'd like us to go down the pathway of saying that these areas for the future are just strictly constructed for boaties only. So we have separation between people who want to go for picnic on the foreshore for other areas to these areas which are limited, where we have to get that deep water access to keep the cost down to build the ramps. So that's the motion. I hope you support me with it.
Speaker against? Anyone? Comment, Councillor Bulgari?
Look, I'm going to vote for it, but it's basically word for word what we've already put up, and the officers are there. They're ready with the information, ready to go. That's all. So I'm just hoping that this isn't going to jeopardise that. They've done a survey of it. They said they've identified four sites and they're just putting it together to send to the state already. So it's a bit of a superfluous motion, but we'll go through the motions, I guess.
You'll be able to...
Okay.
Any other comments, Councillor Hewlett?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Just on boating facilities, I had a meeting recently with one of the senior officers concerning Victoria Point, because it's in a perilous position of being one of the areas that services an island community. Wynnum Creek and Toondra are eventually going to be upgraded through the PDAs, but Victoria Point's left out, basically. So not only do we need to look at future sites, we need to look at upgrading existing sites. Wellington Point, we need to look at multi-level parking or other ways of addressing parking issues down there to satisfy the need, because regardless of what you do, people aren't going to stop going to those areas because they're attractive, beautiful panoramas, and we need more parking, particularly at Victoria Point and Wellington Point, and I've been pushing that point for a long time. So not only new sites, we need to look at upgrading existing sites as well.
Thank you, Councillors. Councillor Tolte, did you want to speak to that as well?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Yes, I've been aware of this work for some time, and I've been working with Councillor Edwards and looking at what facilities we've got in the southern part of the city. There are some sites down in my division that are completely available, I guess. They're not impeded by development. And as Councillor Edwards has mentioned, they can be dedicated to the boat parking. They're not areas that people would want to go for picnics. They're basically in the swamp. So it will be an area that will take the pressure off the other boat ramps that are overcrowded. So I'm very keen to see this work come through and to be able to assess it, and I'm very keen to support the further development of bay access facilities and particularly in the southern part of the city.
Any further discussion, councillors? I'll hand back to Councillor Edwards to sum up.
Only to add that that this will be an ongoing problem unless we do address it, and I'm glad the officers have almost completed that work, but it does need us to drive it to ensure that it happens.
Seconded by Julie Tolte, I think. Okay, Councillor, so that was a sum up, so I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? A motion is carried unanimously. Thank you, Councillor Edwards. Moving on in the agenda, Councillors, where are we? I haven't been advised of any urgent business without notice, so we'll move into the closed session, and we'll probably get a mover to move into closed session. Move Councillor Beard, seconded Councillor Tolte. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. Councillors, I'll now wait for the members of the public and press...